check, 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 check.
Check, rattle, roll. Checking. Do I have a waveform? I have a waveform.
What the f*** is going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the beginning of year 5 of WTF at TFW. Joining me today is Seth Buzzard.
Hey, man.
Yo.
It's been a long road.
I know, and we finally made it to talking about 2013 San Diego Comic-Con news. It's been our goal for the last 5 years.
Are we going to reminisce on...
Yeah, I know. I was just.
I thought you were just blown through it. Just being like, 5 years, moving on.
What do you think of Beast Hunters? Uh-huh. Segway. Just start punching a button.
I'm breaking the trend. We're going to celebrate 6 years. 5 years is for posers.
It's been now roughly 5 years since we all did our first recording. And Seth, you were on the first recording. And you were on previously pre-first recordings.
All... prototype shows.
You were on more proto shows than I was.
Where you were on two?
I think two.
Yeah, I was thinking about those the other night, trying to remember who all was on there. I know D-Fuzz was on at least one.
Yeah.
I know Drew Iden was on at least one. I remember Drew was on. I had no idea who Drew was. Like, I wasn't familiar with Drew back then. But I remember he was there because there was a question about how to pronounce his last name. And he was very specific and explained the whole deal with how to pronounce his last name. And then I teased him about it the next day. And that's why I specifically remember Drew was there. Tricky Disco from Iceland was in one.
Yep. I believe I was on the one she was in, if I recall correctly.
I think there was like... there was at least 8 of us on that one.
Yeah, that was the one with Tony, like, trying to use his headphones as a microphone.
That was all of them.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All of them was Tony using headphones like a microphone. But that one, Skype could not handle that many people, and it was rough.
A lesson was learned that day.
And then... like, I remember Tricky catching a lot of blame. Like, oh, this must be her fault because she's from another country. And then as soon as, like, people started dropping out from the call at the end, but some of us hung around to keep chatting, everything was fine. And she was one of the last people to go.
Yeah.
So it was just the volume, not the locations. But, yeah, those prototype shows were crazy.
I wish I'd known how to record them myself back then.
Yeah. Well, like, one of the things I remember is, man, like, there were strict time limits on topics.
Yep.
I don't think we were supposed to go more than 10 minutes on any given topic. And then when you had, like, 5 to 8 people all trying to comment.
You all get 1.5 minutes to say anything.
Yeah, it was like podcasting and Twitter limitations.
Well, this was also early days podcasting. Right? Was it 06?
Yeah, well, I think it was late 06.
Okay.
Because then everything fizzled out. And I remember that 07 BotCon wasn't that long afterwards. And I gave Tony and Super Megatron a little grief about it. And just the vibe I got back was they didn't want to hear any grief about it, so I just never mentioned it again. Mm. Well, for quite a long time. Then I made a banner, I made a signature picture that I posted in a mod thread, but never used. And it was WTF at TFW, the best podcast you're never going to hear. And then I think, what was it, the own... was it own...
08 TFCon.
Yeah, when you guys started talking about bringing it back.
In my vlog of TFCon 08, there's a point right before a fade out where you hear Colin talking about a podcast. And I was like, yeah.
And then when it came up, I was like, I demand to be included. I was there from the start.
Yeah. Oh, weird long road leading to this podcast existing, and then a weird long road leading to 5 years of it existing in recorded format.
Yeah, well, one other quick memory from those prototype shows. I remember Tony was kind of down on it from the start.
Yep.
Because even though podcasting was still kind of new, video podcasting was brand new. And he felt that we were starting behind doing audio, that video was the next phase, and that he felt we were starting behind. And, you know, there are some video podcasts, but...
Well, back then, I remember...
Audio dominates podcasting.
Yeah, because back then, video was new, but the video podcasts that wowed me were all by Revision 3, who had an actual place to put together proper video.
Yeah.
And I think that... I think back then I could totally see it, but now, you know, this much in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, there's no way that a video podcast would have ever lasted for more than maybe a year.
Yeah, well, like, there's been times where I think, like, this show could benefit from video, like, when we're talking about something, like, being able to hold it up and actually show it, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't... Like, who would want to watch, like... Episode 259, that was over 4 hours.
Who wants to
sit and watch a screen for all of that?
Not even who would want to watch it, but I just think about the production side, where it's even the production end of it is like, I have a good camera. Does everyone else have a good camera? Does everyone know how to get all their cameras to output the right codec? Four-hour podcast, that would be... an enormous amount of encoding and uploading time that I would want to start getting paid for because it would be that much time. That would be like, I don't even know where I could upload a 4-hour video. Like, I think it would be nearly impossible to crush it down enough without obliterating the quality beyond the point of it being watchable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, I think there is a way to do a video podcast about Transformers.
Oh, yeah.
But it would have to be something very different than what we do here.
Yeah, it would need segments, I think.
Yeah, we're like 1 to 2 hosts.
Yeah, yeah, not 6.
And, right. Or even 3 or 4, I think, would start to get too much.
Yeah.
And much shorter format, like very specific.
I think 3 or 4 could work if they aren't all on at the same time. But that is getting more into like segment style.
Yeah.
Stuff. Which, that would be really fun to do. I don't see how... I don't know any way that I could take part in that without other people who have good or decent knowledge of production getting involved as well.
Yeah.
But I would love to take part in that kind of thing, because that would be fun. I would love to figure out a way to start up an actual, like a building in which stuff like that is filmed based on interests I have. But I think my interests are still not quite wide enough a net to financially make sense in that sort of business.
Well, something I thought was, what if you set up like a studio space?
Yeah.
And you had the gear, you had the cameras, you had the, like, the mix board, you had all the stuff. And then you rented out time to other people.
Oh, there are people who do that. It's just the upfront capital to create that studio space can be tricky. Yeah. But I mean, total pie in the sky. I would love to be working on, like, almost daily audio-video content based on toys and, you know, video games and stuff. But there are already a bunch of places that do that, and there are not that many places to do that because it's a very hard thing to make sustainable. So,
you should put together a package and pitch it to Leo Laporte, because he's got all that stuff and he has nothing that covers this sort of material.
But what if he finds out that I play Cards Against Humanity?
As long as you don't do it on any of his programming, there shouldn't be a problem.
Leave that part out.
Oh, man. Boy, I got a story about that. So, the late, great Ryan Davis, back in May, when Dashiana was visiting, we just happened to bump into him. We just happened to run into Ryan. and we're all chatting, and it's cool, and he's being very generous with his time, and I don't think he had any idea he was going to meet somebody from the video game industry that day at Powell's Sweet Shop in downtown Petaluma. So he was sort of stupefied when I introduced Dashy as, like, lead artist at Rovia. So we're chatting, and I forgot about his beef with Leo over Cards Against Humanity. And he makes a comment, like, about how Giant Bomb's in San Francisco now, and it was kind of nice when they were closer, but, you know, it's not that big of a deal. I'm like, oh, you guys should get in good with Leo, and then you could just do videos and stuff here in town. And then he just goes and just gets his look on his face like, I just said Voldemort out loud. He's like, don't even get me started on Leo Laporte. And I'm like, oh man, I forgot. And then he got started on Leo Laporte. And then he sort of made an accusation that I don't think is true. And then I went, yeah, but, you know, I think it was actually this. And he goes, yeah, so you were part of that. And I was like, yeah, I was in a couple of those shows. And I think the explanation, like, why that got, like, shut down was this. Like, I know he was upset about the Cards Humanity thing, but he didn't shut down that show because of it. But anyway, so.
Yeah. Moral of the story is don't bring that up with Leo Laporte when you want to connive him into letting you use the studio space is the way I have taken that whole thing. I use the word connive very specifically.
But Leo wants to keep his stuff clean. And like, cuss words get out every now and then, but he usually bleeps stuff in post or has stuff bleeped. He's the guy.
He doesn't personally
he's got
edit
people
every...
to do the grunt. No, he's got people to do that for him. And I think, so for a little while they had the video game show that they had, which was followed by a show called Shut Up and Play, which was supposed to be like a live streamed LAN party. And I participated in a couple of those. A bunch of computers were set up in the studio and we would all play some multiplayer game. One night when I wasn't there, I kind of wish it was one of the nights I was there because it would have been amazing. instead of a video game, they played Cards Against Humanity. Now, from the couple of times I was there, the question came up, are we allowed to swear? And what was said was they asked Leo about it. Leo said, I want this to be like an actual LAN party. People cuss at LAN parties. Cussing's fine. I guess Cards Against Humanity was too fine. And he was home, not watching. He's at home doing his thing. And then I guess complaints started rolling in, and he had to act on the complaints.
Yeah.
And so he had to shut it down, come back to the studio, go on the air, apologize if anybody was offended, because Cards Against Humanity gets offensive.
Kidding me.
So anyway, that's way off topic. Now we're talking about other people's podcasts and not ours.
Yeah, I want to dial this back to us for a second, because I want to ask you.
I have trouble staying on topic sometimes.
What are you talking about? So think back. You know, to think back to the recording of the first episode,
yes.
did it even, number one, did it even occur to you whatsoever that this might go beyond a year, let alone 5 years? Did it even cross your mind then? Or
I think I remember thinking if we could keep this going for a year, that's going to be pretty cool. And I remember at the time you were really set on making it a year. Like, I remember you were keyed in on the idea you wanted to get one episode a week every week for a year and not miss a week.
Yeah.
So I remember that was a goal. And I remember thinking, this sounds achievable. I hope it just doesn't all fall apart after a year. Like, I hope we don't get to that goal and then go, all right, we could slack off now and skip weeks. Yeah. And then as soon as that happens, it's going to burn out. So I remember hoping it would last, but I don't remember thinking like 5 years from now, we're still going to be rocking.
And I remember how that goal happened is we hit the 1 year and I did my whole little, coming from my Cape Radio background, my little overproduced bit I wanted to do to celebrate the 1 year. And then I was like, well, we've already done 1 year. No reason to specifically stop doing this every week. So let's just keep doing it. And then we'll see if we hit 2 years. And then once we hit 2 years, I was like, well, three is a really good number. We've got to hit 3 years before I start slacking off of this. And that's kind of just how it's going.
Well, I figure as long as it's fun, like, why stop?
Yeah. And I like, especially now that, and in part thanks to this podcast, now that my working life is based on the creation of media, having a weekly thing like this actually is really good for having an anchor that's related to what I do. There are times where, like, editing of the podcast is going to fall behind, especially now, and I always feel really bad about it, but we still record every week, so we're not quite as good as the Bombcast, who get it out every week as well. But
yeah, no matter what, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, holy crap. But last episode, we kind of briefly mentioned stuff about that, too, because it was
new. I haven't heard last episode yet.
That's because I haven't edited it yet. last episode, we mentioned some a little bit. Here and there. Didn't go too specific. I didn't want to be a huge downer, but me and Aaron both had it very much on our minds. So we shared words. I called him a human piece of insert something, and he repeated it, and you know, we hit our little thing. But even though we have not achieved, you know, weekly release, I'm really proud that we've maintained weekly recording. Yeah. Because at least in the backlog, it's all there week by week. And I know that for some people, the news side of it is all there is, and I feel bad that I'm starting to lose touch with that side of our listenership, but I'm glad that people are able to at least quietly at times put up with where editing of this goes, because at least it's all of us still talking about stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting to listen back to early shows and just sort of see how everything's evolved. Like,
yeah,
audio quality, as we've all invested in increasingly expensive microphones.
Yep.
And sort of figuring out a format that worked.
And figuring out how to keep recordings from becoming, like, legitimate work. Like, the editing side's always going to be work in some way, but the recording side, I feel, has become less and less work as time went on. Like, we lost our 66-minute time cap, and then we got way less overstructured, like back when I was making like 15 topic lists.
Yeah. Well, and then figuring out like the pick thing and putting off topic stuff at the end. And even though like in the last couple months, I've done everything in my power to drag everything off topic as much as possible.
I've been having fun with it.
Well, I have too, and I think it's, like, personally my feeling is, like, we've had lineup changes now, and, like, we haven't brought in regular full-time people, but we've lost regular full-time people.
Yeah.
And it's worth mentioning dudes that were there from the beginning, like Lupus and Drew and Gog Dog that aren't on the show anymore. And it's always been amicable. It's always been people going off on their own accord to like do other stuff, or they just don't have time. Like, I think it's great that we've never felt the need to like remove anybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's never been like Lupus tried to stay on and he would have to miss a bunch of weeks in a row. Then he would come back for a little while, then he would miss. And it was always like, whenever you're ready to be on, you're on. And if you can't make it, don't stress out about it.
Yeah.
And it's just been a cool, healthy thing. It's not like you've missed three episodes in a row. You're not dedicated. Get out of here. Like, we've never had that situation.
We don't fire people.
Right.
And I always worry a bit because I'm so much not wanting to, like, just lay pressure on people or make, like, this whole thing of like, I'm going to keep pestering you about it. So I often will go very hands off, and I'm just like, if you need time off, I don't, you know, I'm cool with it. But I also don't like, I think that something I ought to do more often is poke those guys and just go like, hey, just so you know, you can come on whenever. Cause now that I'm thinking about it, I'm starting to feel like my lack of communication about it might be sending messages.
Mm-hmm.
So I should get, I mean, I poked all three of them recently about recording some 5-year clips if they feel like it. But GOG is currently in the midst of a trip. So it's a bit difficult for him. Hopefully we're still going to line up something interesting for a thing. But yeah, I'm really happy that like there's no case of going back to a previous episode, hearing someone who's not regularly on anymore and going like, oh, remember what went down that caused him to stop being on the show.
Yeah. And then a point I completely sidetracked myself on. So like how the show has changed and evolved like kind of over time. Like personally, I don't think it's a problem if now that we're kind of a standing two man on these odd numbers, like I think it's nice that we can drift off topic and then pull back. Mm. And it's just another evolution. I mean, it's not necessarily better than what it was when GOG Dog was still here or when GOG and Drew were still here. But and you know, maybe I'm wrong and there's a group of people out there that hate it, but I think it makes a nice breakup between the odd and the even shows now that, you know, those guys are like Aaron and Omegas are maybe a little more keyed in on aspects that I'm not. And then the odd shows come around and maybe we drift off and joke around a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully other people agree that it's a nice kind of variation. But
and the way I've looked at it,
sometimes I go, man, I hope people aren't going to get mad about this episode because we talked about Breaking Bad for a hell of a long time.
That's the last thing. I always get worried about silly things like, oh man, I hope people don't get offended by something that we said and blah blah blah. No one ever really vocally does, so whatever. But I like where things have evolved, but continue evolving, because it just means that, you know, if you look at the backlog, we've got this wide variety of styles of content, and there's probably stuff that we can't even think of right now that we might turn into as time goes on. And in doing that, that means like, hey, maybe this week isn't for you. Check out next week. Maybe next week isn't for you. Check out the week after that. It might be completely different. I'm really happy that we haven't leveled out every episode to be very much like every other episode.
Yeah. And like personally, my favorite shows wander all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's episodes of the Bombcast where they've gone like 40 minutes before the first mention of video games even comes up. And a bunch of other examples.
Yeah. And I want to say, now that we've hit 5 years, I mean, back in the day, one of the biggest, weird word to use for this, I still think, but biggest inspirations for podcasting I had was Smodcast. Which I have drifted off from listening to, although I don't dislike the idea of Smodcast. It just kind of fell off my catalog because I was having enough trouble keeping up with other shows I got more into. And one of the shows that on my end I found very inspirational for this kind of stuff was Giant Bombcast. The way that I think the best term I heard, it was recently, but it's a great phrase, is the whole thing of let the room breathe. Which is the notion of don't go in and meticulously chop up the entire audio to make it sound perfect to your ear and let things happen naturally. And that's something that didn't used to happen on WTF and slowly started to happen on WTF. And I think it was for the better.
And you're welcome.
Thank you.
Because I kept mentioning that show over and over again to you and GOG Dog.
Yep.
Off mic in air quotes until you guys finally started listening to it.
It was when you sent me the link to the quick look of the Wolverine game. That was what
nailed me in. I made you watch that at BotCon.
Did you?
I made somebody watch it.
It wasn't me, because I know the first time, because that was like one of the first things I ever watched from Giant Bomb, and I remember I was in my room.
Maybe that was Foster.
Yeah.
It was at that Pasadena Botcon, so 09.
That was probably Foster.
Yeah, and we were just sort of hanging out in the room, and I went, oh, you got to watch this, and I started playing it.
Yeah. No, I remember you got me into Giant Bomb. The first thing I ever saw of Giant Bomb that I sat down and watched was the Wolverine thing, and as soon as it was done, I was like, I should have been watching more of this earlier. And not just in podcasting, but they also, like, the whiskey media thing and what Giant Bomb has become and what Tested has become, all are things that I find very inspiring for what I have started to do and what I was doing before and after. So, you know, thanks go out to those things. And,
I'm blanking on the name of that band.
Whilst you're unblanking, I also wanted to send quick thanks out, as always, to, two of the people who, pushed me in their own ways, whether they knew it or not, which is King Lafo and DJ Enigma, because they are the first two people who reciprocated thoughts on stuff that I helped make or made. So I always need to mention them.
Yeah.
Also, we don't bring up King Lafo enough anymore.
No.
That's an evolution. I've had
some exchanges with them recently.
That's a podcast evolution I'm not happy with. We need to say King Lafo more often in here. We need to say King Lafo more often, and we need to say Noise Maze less.
I think we've been doing a good job on the Odd Numbers episode saying Noise Maze less.
That's right. Noise Maze, Noise Maze. I was trying to say Noise Maze name drops. Noise Maze name drops of Noise Maze are happening way less on these episodes, particularly in this one. You won't hear Noise Maze very much at all.
Pre-order 66 has been picking up the Noise Maze slack a lot, so.
If
you need your Noise Maze mentions, check out Pre-order 66.
Noise Maze is a shrewd gentleman who knows how to get his way into the spoken word of some of these podcasts. He's also going to be he's going to be my supplier of a fresh tomahawk, so, you know, fist bumps out to Noise Maze. He's going to be a thing next week.
Yeah, like when the whole idea of doing a podcast for the site first came up, like, I was aware of podcasting, but I wasn't, like, actively listening to any shows. Like, I remember listening to a couple episodes of Radio Free Cybertron, and that was sort of pre-podcasting.
That was before that was a word.
Yeah, like, they were doing an audio program, but there was no RSS feed attached. You went to the site and you click play and you listen to it there.
Yeah.
But it was still an audio show on the internet that you listened to whenever you wanted. But I was kind of fascinated with talk radio at the time, and not like, like political talk radio, which drives me nuts, but like wacky morning show DJs and there's some really interesting stuff on NPR, and maybe some people go, that's political too. But I mean, like, they have like book review shows that were actually kind of fascinating. That's the first place I ever heard about John Hodgman.
Mm-hmm.
Was on an NPR thing. Like, he wasn't even doing the Apple commercials yet. And when those Apple commercials started, I didn't realize that was the same guy that did this crazy interview on NPR. But so I was into this idea of audio based broadcast. So when there was this opportunity to be part of something like that, I jumped at it. And then by the time we started doing this, like for real, I had gotten into podcasts. And I remember when we were originally talking about it and how it was going to be formatted, I remember I wrote you a PM where I gave you links to like 8 or 10 different shows that all had different formats.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, here's an example of a 2-man show. Here's an example of a 4-man show. This show is just conversational. This show has segments broken up into topics. This show has something completely different from that. I just wanted to be part of something.
Well, we all had, I think, a like really this. Big eagerness at the start. And yeah. I still have an eagerness for these things, but One thing that kind of bums me out in reflection, and I've mentioned this before, even pretty lately before, but I wish that I had more time to be able to organize more supplemental and ancillary podcasts, like more book club and more regular prime time. But such is the balance of life and spinning lots of plates. I don't want to stop doing the podcast, but I need to... I need to dial back organizing them to one a week for a bit.
Well, I've had suggestions about that in the past. Maybe I'll bring them up again. I don't think it's the sort of thing to talk about on the show.
No, let's just lay it all bare, and then I'll get really angry and just start screaming at you. And you know, that's how it goes in the organizational thread. So,
well, if these suggestions make you angry, then. I think there's something up with you. I don't think it's my because if like I'm trying to think of ways to do this without making a lot of work for you. Like,
no, I want work. Respect me.
I don't have time to do the work, but I have to do all the work.
I hate all
How
this
dare
work.
You take away my work.
None of you can do this except me.
My work validates my existence. You are trying to devalidate my existence.
What am I without this podcast? And that's pretty much how it goes in the podcast organizational thread.
Yeah, I've had suggestions for a lot of people recently that fall on deaf ears, so I'm used to it.
Yeah, I'm the deafest.
No, there is one more deaf than you.
Yes, there is.
I'll tell you who later.
Yep. Anyway, we talked a lot of the while, but I like reminiscing about this stuff on the anniversary times that we have.
Well, you know, we have listeners now that weren't listening at the beginning.
Yeah.
And we've covered a lot of this ground in past anniversary type situations, but...
Yes, thanks for putting up with us repeating ourselves every year or so, everyone.
Well, my point is there's people who haven't heard it yet.
Okay.
So it's at least interesting to them.
Yeah. And all the people who've been around long enough to hear all this, they're also probably used to us repeating ourselves anyway. So, you know, thanks for putting up with it, guys. Thanks for putting up with it. Hey. Let's start talking about Transformers.
All right.
Now, you know, we'd usually go into a nice varied topic list, balanced in different directions with lots of different... varieties of but I'm just gonna talk about San Diego Comic Con because that just happened.
So anyway, there was some Game of Thrones stuff at San Diego.
Starting off for San Diego, Nickelodeon exclusive TMNT Shredder. No. Why do I have to scroll to the bottom of the TFW 2005 news post to get our TFW 2005 news? Who made this news post? Joe Moore.
Joe Moore hates TFW.
Oh no. You know what? I'm looking at this right now.
None of them's listen. None of the mucky mucks listen to us anymore.
Hey, Hiss Tank. What's up with having less than 5 news items? Don't you got more to talk about? Hiss Tank, huh?
Yeah, what up, Hiss Tank? Where you at?
Yeah, I mean, Toku Nation, they're still new. They're still fresh. They're still green.
Yeah, they haven't gotten tired of it yet.
Yeah, you know, they
don't worry, they will.
They only got a couple, but apparently Toku Nation is covering Pacific Rim. I don't disagree with that. That's pretty clever.
I think they're just trying to pad their numbers.
Maybe. But coming down to the TFW 2005 news.
Toyota Nation.
That's right. let's see. This first one here is just a bunch of stuff in the display case, and that's difficult to discuss, so let's go to the named things. We're going to start with Beast Hunters on display. This is just the Beast Hunters stuff from that first topic. Okay, that makes this easier.
Actually, it was Beef Hunters.
Beef Hunters! They all fight cows.
If you hear my mouse clicking a lot in this episode, I apologize, listeners, but I'm trying to keep up with the pictures we're talking about.
Yeah. And so kicking this off, I'm just going to start scrolling through the pictures, I think. We're starting off with some looks at them simplified deluxes, what are based on the Legion Cyberverse toys. I have come to the point of hesitating to say upscaled because I think upscaling would have yielded less surface detail than what they have. So I'm,
yeah, like we talked about this in a bit in 259, how I agree upscaling doesn't really explain what these are, because there are added detail, there are different joint systems being used.
Yeah.
It's not just a straight sized up.
There aren't so gigantic ball joints on these.
Right.
So I'll also just throw it in, because I'm only going to say it the one time. That doesn't mean I'm saying that I think these are all amazing. I just like to use better diction and language. Also, these are the same four that we saw before, so there's nothing really new to see in these guys. Maybe I didn't clearly see Smokescreen had two axes that are also guns, and that's neat. When he's using them as axes, he's just holding a gun by the end of its barrel and hitting you with the other side.
Yeah, and when we were talking about the upscaling thing last time, I was still kind of formulating my thought on it. So this might sound a little repetitive from 259, but I think where I land on this is, and we talked about, this is going to be really repetitive for you because we talked about this before we started recording.
That's my life.
But I just want to reiterate for the listeners. So Hasbro is doing this with several lines, and I'm just stating the situation right now. Everybody knows this, but I'm just kind of laying it out to build up to my point. So in Transformers, Marvel, Star Wars, they're splitting things up. Like, instead of trying to satisfy the adult collector who wants the more articulation, the more detail, the more paint apps, and still have an affordable toy for the kids, for the parent that just wants the Spider-Man toy to shut little Billy up in the store.
Friggin' Billy.
With the less articulation, the fewer paint apps, I think it's a good move to split stuff up. Have, and I'm just going to use these terms, like the low-end version for the kids, the upper-end version for the collectors. Where I think it gets difficult for Transformers is, like with Star Wars and Marvel, you'll have a Spider-Man in each category. You'll have a Luke Skywalker in each category. But the split with Transformers seems to be, like, the TV movie stuff is going to be in that simplified kid category, while the updated older stuff, like G1 and Beast Wars and whatever else they put in the generations. So I can see where it's going to be a little tougher for Transformer fans. Like, if there's a character in whatever the next TV show is, or even Beast Hunters, that you really like, or a movie character that you really like, and you want a good, higher quality figure of that character, but they're only in that kid category, I understand how that's going to be frustrating.
As do I, because I will probably be one of the frustrated ones.
Right, so I think it's a good strategy on Hasbro's part to separate these categories out so they could better serve the two markets. But just from how Transformers is splitting up, it's trickier. They're not dividing it up. Maybe it would be good if they mix some of the big name characters in from TV and movies into generations also, and not just focus on revamping past stuff. Maybe that will be better for all the adult collectors.
Yeah. And I got hopes for generations. Some of the stuff we saw at San Diego Comic-Con, in stuff that we're now seeing color pictures of, are also things that very specifically, when I saw the gray prototype pictures, were giving me hope for generations. Also, I just noticed that the topic we were going to use as a chapter listing, I just realized we should just click on, like, the nice-looking pictures, because they're pictures of everything in the cases. And all the links to the nice-looking pictures all are linking to the Loyal Subjects vinyl pictures. Because someone...
Which link is that? There's
All the ones on the bottom were the ones I was talking about, and they all link to the Loyal Subjects vinyl figures. Like, they all start with the word SDCC, and then they're, like, official... The official images ones. All the official images ones all go to Loyal Subjects. So... While you were talking, I went into our topic list and I made us a proper chapter listing, so let's go back there.
Okay, because I'm still not sure what you're talking about.
Okay, go to the topic list, then everything under that first link are the things that I think will be the easiest to use as sources, because those are all the new pictures.
I just clicked on the first link and I was like, this is taking me back to what I don't.
We'll have a long podcast about the Loyal Subjects vinyl figures, yeah.
Okay.
So, the first thing that I figure we could talk about properly here would be the New Generations Deluxe pictures.
All right, let's talk about those. I'm on that page.
Yeah, so we got... Okay, one of these New Generations Deluxes came out of nowhere, and I'm going to save that one for last. First up, we've got color pictures of the Armada Starscream that I saw in gray prototype form at the slideshow at BotCon. These pictures are much better. You can see the toy better. There's one bummer I have about the toy, which is that his swords are too small, and they aren't made from one of his wings, which is, to me, an iconic part of that character. But apparently the wings are ball-jointed on there, so hopefully a third party will make new wings what can turn into swords. Otherwise, I like how he looks. He's got you can fold those shoulder pods on his shoulders back, according to some of the on-hand photos we had at the show. And I think he looks fine. He's Armada Starscream, he's maybe a bit too red. He could use some more black detailing, and maybe that'll happen with the Takara Tomy version. But I'm kind of digging the fact that they are doing a toy of one of the best of the few that I would call good Armada characters.
Yeah, like, I think it's cool that their Generations is venturing into not just G1.
Yeah.
And... I do not think Armada figures really hold up anymore.
Not too well.
I remember loving them when they first came out. I don't think they... Some of them still work.
Tidal Wave. Some of them Tidal Wave stood up.
Yeah. And, like, I kind of like... Man, it's been a long time. What was the tanky guy?
Oh, Demolisher.
There's still stuff about Demolisher I really like.
Me too.
But even if, like, the toys themselves don't hold up as well, like, there's still a lot of really cool design stuff in Armada. And I liked the Seeker style in Armada. So I'm stoked for, like, this upgraded thing. Like, and I agree, maybe he's, like, too red. But, like, I think the robot mode looks cool.
Well, hey, you know what? It's a toy of a Starscream. I bet you it'll get repainted once or twice.
I'm a sucker for Seekers. I have been known to buy repaints of Seeker molds.
I would really like it if they had already... Like, you know how they usually design an alternate head up front? Uh-huh. It'd be kind of cool if they designed an alternate head for this, which is literally just the crazy Mohawk alternate head that Armada Skywarp, I believe, had.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Thundercracker should be identical, just blue. And Skywarp should have a completely different head from the other two.
Yeah. I would really like to see this thing repainted a bunch. And also, I heard some rumor. I don't know the source of the rumors whatsoever. It might have just been complete conjecture. But there are people theorizing that since this is in Generations and is a deluxe, we'll probably have a comic book. This might be what the current comic book Starscream suddenly looks like. Or ends up reformatting into. And I wouldn't be opposed to that if it means we get more Armada toys. Yeah, I'm into this one. This one got a severely lukewarm reception. The color scheme, completely, I can see it, but I think also some people were super excited to be able to say they don't like something based on Armada, because it's been so long since they could say that. Because there were some folks, or some of the, not folks even, just the reactions of stuff like, you know, oh god, the sculpt is so ugly, it looks terrible. I'm like, it looks exactly like what it's supposed to look like. I don't know what else it could do.
without that big long thing shooting out straight out his back that housed the electronics.
Yeah, now that's gone.
I always wish could fold down.
And now it can fold down and isn't as long.
Yay.
How could they do that? They ruin... Oh!
All my dreams are coming true.
I almost wonder if the design process of this started with just in all capitals, really messily written, kind of angrily with a Sharpie on like white paper. Someone wrote "the backpack folds down." Like that was that was just the first thing they decided before anything else.
It was written on a napkin.
Yeah. I almost wonder if Aaron Archer very well could have had a hand in this, and you know, because Armada was Aaron Archer's debut into Transformers. I wonder if he had some touches on this thing.
That's right. Remember, let's go down memory lane.
That's a dumb.
Remember the early Armada figures, the Autobot and the Skepticon logos. They were all sculpted on.
Yep.
And they were just painted red or purple.
Just black painted, not even nicely. Yeah. Like.
And then people spazzed out. And then later waves had white, like in like for the eyes and the lines,
the bordering basically,
right? And they look nice, but man, I remember people bugged out about those early. And do they even sculpt on the emblems anymore?
Not too often. I think it happens every now and then, but in order to keep things easily repaintable, I think they stopped appearing.
Yeah, I just grabbed this Prime Wheeljack I had nearby. I don't see an Autobot logo on him at all.
I would say I don't recall any Prime figures having a logo sculpted in.
Well, I don't even see one tampoed on.
Wheeljack is missing one. That's actually a kind of...
Yeah.
Repro Labels specifically made a thing. Oh, even Dr. Wu he threw in stickers in his little Wheeljack kit.
Cliff Jumper. I don't see one on Cliff Jumper either.
Cliff Jumper is evil, that's why. I don't know.
These just happen to be, like, the two most on-hand figures that I had.
So, Armada Starscream is happening. Excuse me. And the one of the other great prototypes we saw at BotCon, amusingly enough, was this Skywarp. Which is really funny, because they showed us this in great prototype form, and we were all like, we know what the toy's out. We guessed he was going to be painted, like, never mind. So, we've got pictures of... the Generations version of Fall of Cybertron Skywarp. It's the Fall of Cybertron Starscream, done in purple and black and gray. And I think it looks more like Skywarp than the Takara Tomy one. And I'm kind of happy I didn't jump on the Takara Tomy one. I think the Takara Tomy one looks neat. It just doesn't look like a Skywarp to me. And this looks more like Skywarp.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot that I like in the design of the video games. I've never gotten into the Seeker. Like, I like the jet mode well enough, but there's just something about the robot mode I've never been able to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're doing the three, and
looking at the picture of the robot mode, like, the whole head and chest area on the Skywarp looks really nice. Like, there's a lot going on. Like, the sort of auburn canopy color, and the purple, and the gray, and the red, and then some more auburn, and it looks nice. Like, the colors look nice. There's just something about the design of the robot mode that I just haven't been able to get into.
And I'm actually a little surprised that we're getting all three stateside, because, Reed Echoes on this mold, as far as, you know, your usual Seeker Reed Echoes, have been going kind of slow. And Million Publishing unveiled their new exclusive for this year, and it's just Starscream done in translucent plastic. And I'm like, man, you couldn't have even just done him yellow like Sunstorm? Nope. Okay. Translucent. Which is great, because it means I don't have to pursue this year's Million Publishing Generations exclusive toy. The last of these deluxes that we saw in gray form at the BotCon panel is Scoop with his double Target Masters. Now, Scoop, I flipped out about because I have legitimate nostalgia love for Scoop, because him and Quick Mix were two of my longtime toy companions when I was little. And this is basically a perfect update to Scoop. He's got the double Target Masters. I'm really impressed how much sculpting and paint work is happening on the Double Target Masters. Like, their only posability is that they have ball-jointed shoulders, but whatever, there's two of them. And Scoop looks beautiful in terms of being Scoop. He's the right colors, he's the right shape. I really like, you know, the simplicity. Like, it looks like he has a nicely simple transformation, and he has a really clean robot mode. General Techno on Twitter was talking about how the robot mode looks Scrapper enough that they could potentially redeco him as Scrapper, which I could see happening. But I am super into the Scoop, and his shoulders are a bit funny, but his colors are so perfect, I can deal with it, I think.
Yeah, I'm a little worried that maybe it's maybe a little too simple. Like, if Generations is going to be the more kind of more complicated collector thing, and he's got them hollow forearms that bug me, and I'm guessing the back of his legs are hollow, which bugs me. But you know, I've ranted about that in the past.
I'm letting the hollow forearm thing go after someone pointed out that Cyclonus has him, and then I was like, oh no. You're right. Oh, no. I don't think his transformation is going to be too simple now that I'm looking at pictures of him and clicking left and right. I think it's just like the idea of it is simple, but there appear to be things going on. And I don't know what the hinge in his stomach is for. So I have high hopes.
Doing sit-ups.
Crunchies. Also, friggin' Scoop. This is the kind of obscure that I like. Someone out there is probably upset that he's not their favorite character, but he's one of my favorite characters, so I guess I win.
He's taking up a slot that my favorite character could have been in.
So that's a phrase.
And my favorite character wouldn't have had hollow forearms.
That's a phrase that is getting weird to see on the internet, because I'm seeing it in more than one place. I'm so, quote, that character's taking a slot. And I don't know. It's weird how that's permeating everywhere. I don't think that there are slots. This leads, though, to my favorite of what?
Scoop stealing all our jarbs.
We would have a Generations Deluxe Headmaster if it weren't for this stupid Double Target Master called Scoop.
Yeah, there would definitely be a Generations Chrome Dome if it wasn't for Scoop and the third parties.
That's right. Scoop swooped in. He did a Scoop swoop.
There could have been a swoop if it wasn't for Scoop.
Scoop took the slot from everyone. What? Because he was faster and has two buddies.
Yeah, because his transformation was simpler. He was able to get in there quick.
Yeah, he bumped his way in and he's like, hey, look, I brought two friends. They fit into the budget. Hasbro was like, all right, Scoop, you've won us over. Because that's how it works. And yep.
We went on that Hasbro tour. We saw it happening.
Yeah, we saw Scoop banging on the door back then in 07. He didn't have his Double Target Masters with him, so they just shooed him away because he didn't have anything to wow them.
Come back when you have Target Masters.
Like, hey, what's up, Orange Scrapper? Why don't you come back when you're interesting? So anyway. Of these deluxes, the one that has me obscenely excited doesn't even have a name. It's called Minicon Combiner. And it is a team of black and red and yellow. Not red, that's green. Oh no. A team of black and green and yellow Minicons. They are very military themed. The helicopter, by all accounts, is a lady robot. And the three of them can also combine into this badass looking combined form, what looks all poseable and stuff. And the lady robot appears to be the leader of the team because she's on top. So, I think these look completely fantastic. They look like decently posable little Minicons with a ton of character in their sculpt. Their transformations look pretty interesting. The tank guy's head sculpt is friggin' amazing. It looks like it is actually quite reminiscent of I forgot the Minicon's name, but the one that had the big monocle in the military team. And having a lady helicopter robot, I mean, it looks like a lady robot. There's high heels and thunder thighs going on. Either way, regardless of the gender of the helicopter robot looks freaking cool. They all look cool. And I love that their combined form looks like a fully posable, normally posable robot who has shoulders and hips and knees and elbows. So I'm tremendously excited about this thing. The only thing that could ruin this is if it can barely hold together in combined mode. So hopefully that's not the case. And it has the Minicon symbol on I think all three of these little guys. And I haven't seen that symbol in a while. So I'm really
Since
into this.
Since Armada!
That's right. No, it was an Energon, too.
Since Energon!
Since the Unicron Trilogy! So, Minicon Combiner is actually my pick of these four, because I think it looks like it's going to be the most fun and the most characterful of the four. Not to say I dislike the other three, but...
The tank dude alone is the most characterful.
His
robot mode is crazy.
I know, because he looks like a little guy stuffed into a giant body. Like these tiny little heads surrounded by armor. And his
gun... He looks like the sort of dude that, like, in 1980s cartoons, like, there would always be, like, the dumb guy character that would kind of sound like, "Duh, what are we gonna do now?" Like, he would be that guy in a 1980s cartoon featuring this team of Feminitron.
And I love that he has...
The lady's on top, so it's Feministron.
That's right. I love that he has a gun, and they show a picture of his tank mode with and without the gun, just because...
Just because.
Yeah.
Days where he feels sort of pacifist-y.
How are you feeling about these Minicon dudes on the whole?
I think it's interesting. I think it's something to check out more, like when actual pictures come out, not like the official, like, too good to be true pictures.
Well, the thing is that the actual pictures, I think, are going to be the real test of... That'll be when someone has them in hand, so they'll probably come with a report of this thing holds together rock solid, or I can barely keep it in combined mode without it falling to pieces.
Yeah, like, I'm curious how the legs are going to work, because, like, you have... Actually, I'm kind of curious how a bunch of aspects of this work, because it looks like the jet is all over the place. There's parts of the jet on the back, on the torso... On the legs and arms, and, like, I'm not exactly sure where the rest of the tank went.
Yeah,
but it's kind of interesting, like, with the legs, it looks like there's parts of the helicopter kind of coming down alongside the legs.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that's going to work, but at least in this picture, it looks interesting design-wise.
Like, I almost wonder if the tank comes apart in some way. Or is,
I'm
oh, no,
wondering
no, you know
if
what?
All the, of them don't come apart in some
way. Okay, I'm seeing it now. The jet, the arms of the combined mode are the jet's legs.
Oh, so the big double barrel thing is a separate piece? Like,
yeah, it looks like that's just
piece?
His gun, yeah. So the double barrel thing, I think, is just a gun, and then the thing attached to it is the other gun in the set. The helicopter has no gun. The jet... It looks like the jet folds up to form the stomach, the back, and the arms. The helicopter plugs down on top to form the chest and the head. And then I want to say the tank is basically everything from the waist down.
That sounds plausible. And then it just looks like there's parts of the helicopter that just hang down the sides.
At least some of those are also from the tank. Like, the two sideways plates where one of them has the symbol on it, those are from the tank.
But I mean, like, the what looks kind of like a squiggly long pieces that come down from the hip.
Yeah, yeah, I think...
That are sort of alongside the rest of the legs.
Yeah, I think those are from the helicopter. I don't know. Also, I really like that it's not insanely obvious how these three things combine. Uh-huh. Like, it feels like a very imaginative design, and... if the Transformers Go guys taught me anything, it's that even when the individual toys aren't super amazing, I love the idea of a team of three who all have two modes and can also combine.
Yeah, well, this is one of those cases where it's like I see aspects that seem interesting, I see aspects that I'm not really into, but I gotta see more before I, like, take any sort of a stance on it. So it's like this is one of those things, like, my opinion right now is... I gotta wait and see before I say anything definitive.
The thing that also really excites me is Minicons have forever been the Scout price point for 3, and this is the Deluxe price point for 3, and putting the economy slightly aside, I still feel, with that in mind, this means that these are 3 mini-cons who potentially have more engineering in them than mini-cons in past have had. Like, primarily for the combined mode. Because the last time we've had combining mini-cons were, like, the 2 Perceptors, and they were neat at the time, but they also weren't really crazy intricate the way that they combined. They would just kind of stack.
And the Star Saber and whatever that shield was called.
And those would really, really just stack.
Yeah.
So this thing seems like it does a bit more than just stack, and I bet you being a deluxe helped push that along. So that's really cool. But those are the deluxes, so let's go on into the Generations Legends official images, which I am so happy to see, because I really wanted to get another look at the first thing I want to talk about, which is Legends Tailgate with Ground Pounder. So Tailgate, in the current comics right now, Tailgate is a very beloved character. And this version of Tailgate's robot mode, it's not completely comic accurate, but basically the head, the chest, and the shape of the legs are all straight out of the comic book. So this is pretty much meant to be the comic book character. In the comic book, Tailgate doesn't actually have an Earth mode, so that's the contention taken here, where in this case he turns into an Earth car. Also, his little buddy is a little construction thing, and this was the thing, now that you can all see it in the weapon mode as Tailgate is holding him, this is what was described as a rake, and I still totally see that. I can also see, like, a battle claw or something, but I prefer the idea that it's an over-engineered, hand-powered rake.
So is Tailgate the new Drift?
No, Tailgate's not cool in the comics. I'll give you the brief synopsis. Tailgate was gonna be on the first arc that took off billions of years ago and found the Dead Universe. Instead, on the way there, Tailgate fell into a hole. Went into stasis lock, would wake up for a few seconds every 1,000 years, and then eventually was discovered, having missed the entire war. So Tailgate is this, like, super long-term amnesiac who woke up before the war started. Or, no, he was out and about before the war started and then woke up after it ended, and, like, he's from before there were Autobots and Decepticons, and then, like, one of the subplots of the early books he's in are, like, what brand do you want to have, if any brand at all? So very.
Did he fall in the same hole from This Is the End?
Yes.
Oh man, that's a bad hole.
Definitively, yes. Same hole.
Did you see that movie?
Nope.
You should see that movie. That movie's so fun. That's one of the funniest movies I think I've ever seen.
All right. Oh, wait, that was the... I remember. That's the movie that I actually kind of want to see in VIP. I want to see it. One of the theaters down here, you can go into a VIP room to, like, have a nice proper armchair to watch a movie in. And they bring you your drinks and stuff. And I was thinking about seeing This Is the End in armchair. That's the apocalypse comedy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or with all the dudes playing themselves.
Yeah. No, I really want to see it, because when you gave a not spiteful review of it, that's what I really wanted to hear, was that at least one person I knew laughed at the movie. Because I love the concept of it. It's Tailgate great. Likes the concept, too. But with or without all that knowledge of Tailgate's beloved comic book status in mind, what do you think of this Tailgate?
I'm not... I don't know. I like the design of the car mode. I'm just not into Legends. Like, Legends are too small and simply for my taste. When they're trying to portray a more complicated character, like, when Legends are trying to just... Like, there's been times where Legends have just kind of been their own thing.
Yeah.
Where... I think that's where it works. When there's a legend of a character that exists in larger scales, and then Tailgate, I guess, doesn't exist on a larger scale right now, but he's a character that probably should, just as far as his design. Maybe I should put it that way. Maybe that's how I should have been putting it from the start. when a legend is designed to be a legend and not just a small version of a character is when I think they work best.
Well, these new ones do something that kind of has won me over, which is something I didn't know would be carrying through to these guys, but I saw it in Swerve, is they have classic scout levels of posability going on, which is what I was really hoping to see in these comic book oriented ones, especially Tailgate. Because even like the Prime and the Bumblebee out right now, they aren't like, they have some limitations, so do the Starscream and Megatron, but these IDW oriented ones with the with these more MicroMaster based partners really seem to be pushing the envelope a bit in being more like proper scout toys. And this Tailgate, I think, wouldn't really, I think this works better because in the books, this Tailgate is kind of tiny. Like, he's a pretty small dude. So the posability upgrade happening here is bringing me on board with this. I think even his shoulders are ball jointed inside the shells of the pauldrons. There's only one other one here to talk about too, which is Sharp Shot, which is the name for Shrapnel now, and I really don't like that name at all. I already don't like the name Hard Shell, but I think Sharp Shot is worse. It's really obviously Shrapnel. And his little buddy partner he has is Reflector, who is a robot, a camera, and a gun. And I really like the idea because these guys are so G1 that this is just one of the many Reflectors in the G1 cartoon, specifically the really terrified one who got sent through the space bridge in that little go-kart. And Shrapnel just kidnapped him and mangled him into a Target Master because the gun mode looks a lot like Shrapnel's old G1 weapon. It's got those like the kind of bladey things on either side of the barrel. So I like the idea that Shrapnel just kidnapped the most terrified of the Reflectors and just turned him into a Target Master. the Shrapnel looks okay too. I'm not a super attached to the original Insecticons person, so it looks fine. I'm actually more excited about the tiny Reflector connection. But I wasn't sure how posable this guy was when we saw him in gray prototype form. And between him and Tailgate, Swerve, and Cosmos, I'm really happy that the upcoming Legends are more like Scouts than Legends.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really bugged by the name. I mean, if they can't call him Shrapnel anymore, you know, Sharpshot is probably, it invokes the concept of Shrapnel, I suppose.
Yeah. I hate hearing it. It's like, for some reason, it grates my ears, the combination of SHs and Ts. I don't know why.
Mm. I'm trying to brainstorm up like in another. There's like little bits of metal lodged in your flesh.
Metal bits. What's up? I'm Transformers Decepticon Metal Bits.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think just from the pictures, I think Sharp Shot is working a little better for me as a legend than what's his face?
Tailgate.
I wanted to call him Bumper Something for some reason. It's been Bumper a long Gate. Day. Bumper Something.
That would be a horrible name.
Sharp Bumper.
Maybe.
We'll see when I see it in person. Like, there's stuff about the Reflector I like. Like, I think the camera mode looks kind of bad, but, like, not bad, like, ew, I don't like it. Like, the kind of bad where it's, like, it looks, it's wrong, but in a way that I like, if that makes any sense. Like, it's bad. And
it's, like, something that's not a camera that's trying really hard to look like a camera.
Yeah, and like there's enough camera to it that it passes, but it looks more like one of those really expensive prosumer Sony camcorders from the 90s than an SLR.
The lens is kind of enormous on it.
Well, I remember, like, Sony had those cameras, like, in the 90s that were, like, they were super expensive.
Yeah.
But they were, like, the best kind of camera you could get at the time, and, like, it was good enough for television, and it wasn't HD yet, but it was, like, the best standard definition you could imagine. They had, like, those kind of really big lenses and a small body, and...
Yeah.
So it's prosumer Sony reflector.
And he also turns into a gun.
Also, just like those Sonys did.
Yeah, exactly like them.
The 90s were nuts. But, it was all grunge rock and camera guns. That's all I remember.
Being in school at the time was weird for me.
When somebody said, can I take your picture? You had to be certain you could trust that person.
You had to duck. Those are all the Legends toys that got revealed. So let's move on to a huge point of discussion during the reveals this past couple days, which is Generations Voyager Whirl. Now, I feel somewhat responsible for some of the unhappiness that surfaced when this toy popped up, because I thought that I and others had made it very clear that when we saw the gray prototype pictures of this, it was very much based on G1 Whirl and not the current comic book Whirl, who looks a whole lot more like Tomahawk, with Whirl stuff added in. This is a very It's Opposable G1 toy style Whirl, whose IDW connotations are primarily in the backwards knee look of the legs, which I do really like. A lot of people were basically not flipping out, but just supremely bummed that this was in no way the comic book world. And it's, I guess, all of our fault for not more clearly stating that after the Hasbro panel at BotCon.
I didn't catch what you were saying there at first. I thought you were building up to say this looks nothing like G1 world. And I'm looking at the picture of the robot mode thinking, like, what is this dude talking about? Like, this looks crazy, G1 World.
Doesn't look nothing like World. Not my world.
Hashtag not my world.
So yeah, this is way more of a G1 world with a little bit of IDW-ness in that. And it's actually quite helpful, because G1 World's biggest problem is how much of a gigantic stick he is. And this one adds in the sort of chicken-style bird legs and a little bit of extra width to the shoulders, which both, to me, come from the IDW version, and both, to me, greatly enhance the G1 Whirl silhouette. Also, I think, in part, to make this more like the Triple Changers who came before him, there are a lot of different pictures of the vehicle mode showing that you can attach guns to it, and then there's a Gerwalk picture, which is a helicopter with chicken legs, and that's kind of awesome. As for Whirl himself, I think he looks pretty cool. He's the one that I believe they said is going to potentially have a sticker sheet done in tandem with the G.I. Joe team. I think this looks like a fun toy. Sticker sheet. But, certainly I can see how people who built up the image of this perfect IDW Whirl in their heads would be disappointed. I'm going to find a picture of him so I can show Seth.
Yeah, guess who's not disappointed? Me.
Yeah. Oh, also, this guy brought about a new bit of... I mean, it's been said before, but it's the first time I've seen it said en masse. People were saying this Whirl is 2G1. And given...
Not for me.
Given the way discussions about Classics, Generations, and other similar lines have gone before, I think it's really funny that it's all circled back around, and now someone's all like, no, it's 2G1. It needs to be less G1.
Well, here's my personal history with Whirl. I never owned a world, ever. I only ever knew one person that had a Whirl, like grade school days, when it was new. One kid had a Whirl, he brought it to school one day. I got to mess with it a little bit then. That memory is so... I don't know why. That memory is so locked in my head. Maybe just early Transformers with a mono eye are my thing. Like Shockwave.
Mm-hmm.
But just like I just so vividly remember messing with that Whirl. On the playground in Novato. Just Pleasant Valley School. That was the grade school I was at. Yeah, I don't know. So, like, I see this robot mode, and I go, yeah. And then I look at the helicopter mode, and I go, yeah. And then I look at the gearwalk mode, and I go, why not?
Yeah. That's my reaction to the gearwalk. I'm going to send you a link now. This is a picture of Whirl from the current comic book. This is him kicking in a door in an issue from last year. They're on their way to a mission. He's kicking down a door and demanding that Rewind take footage of him getting ready for a fight they're on their way to.
Weird.
So that's what people were expecting, was that more curvy, thinner, blade-like Whirl. So it is clear, seeing that picture, hopefully, where some people's disappointment came from, if they built up in their heads an image of that as a Voyager.
Well, that's the thing about expectations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could go to Pacific Rim, and you could expect
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, you could expect Pan's Labyrinth Guillermo del Toro. You could expect Hellboy Guillermo del Toro. If you go in expecting Hellboy Guillermo, you're going to be happy. If you want serious Guillermo, you're not going to be so happy. Hopefully you'll be won over and become happy.
But manage
your expectations.
My friend and former roommate, Jacob, when I brought up that notion of people expecting, you know, more from a Del Toro film, he replied with, "But Del Toro is almost always a very mainstream filmmaker who does it well." And I was like, I forgot about that. You're right. So, I think the Pan's Labyrinth thing kind of makes me twitch a little, because I'm like, the one film. Sure.
Here's what I like about Guillermo movies. They always seem like he was just having a great time.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's Pan's Labyrinth, or whether it's Hellboy, or whether it's Pacific Rim, I get the feeling coming through the movie that he's having fun. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I like Pacific Rim.
I did too. I just saw it for the second time. I don't usually see movies more than once in theaters.
Did you bring Jacob all the centipedes he left you with?
I brought them a little jar and I poured them down the back of his neck as we watched the film. He didn't seem to notice.
Great if you had a jar full of centipedes. And, like, you wait till it's, like, all dark and the movie's been going for a little bit. And you open it up and, like, you try to play it off like it's snacking. You go, hey, man, you want some? And then he, like, just kind of reaches in, not looking. And then, like, at first, his first thought is, like, I'm trying to pay attention to the movie, but I appreciate that my friend is offering me treats. So I'm just going to take some treats.
Oh, these are so crunchy. Are these pretzel sticks? Oh, they're soft on the inside.
And they keep wriggling.
I wouldn't do that to someone, but I like the idea.
Yo, no, they're called crunchy soft wriggles. They're supposed to be like
crunchy soft wriggles. So that's Voyager Whirl, who I think looks okay. I like the look of the toy.
I love the look of the toy. I'm psyched for Whirl. Ah, I just closed the window with the links in it. I had, like, so many links open, I was clearing them out, and I went too far.
I've done that. I've done the thing where I accidentally click close all other tabs. That's the worst.
No, I didn't do that.
Good. You don't want to do that. I just
got link happy.
I'll just, for now, pass you the next link directly in here. We're going to talk about the reveals from the Thrilling 30. We've discovered Thrilling 30 is an actual numbering scheme of 30 releases to celebrate the 30th anniversary. We also found out the slight bummer during the panel that numbers 5, 6, and 7, I believe, are numbers 1, 2, and 3, but in Asia-exclusive packaging. And I think that's kind of horse-honky myself.
So, there's doubles in the 30?
Okay, so number 1 of Thrilling 30 is San Diego Comic-Con Metroplex, right?
Okay.
I believe number 5 of the Thrilling 30 is the Asia, what's it called, AgeCon or something, Metroplex, which is the San Diego Comic-Con Metroplex, but with different colored decoys. And that's number 5, whereas the San Diego Metroplex with red and purple decoys is number 1. So if you are trying to actually collect all of the Thrilling 30, you have to buy 5 Asia-exclusive items, which are items that already exist over here, just in different boxes. Some of which are also in the Thrilling 30. already.
Is this just something they're referencing it as, or is there something that identifies them as the Thrilling 30? Like, is there
their boxes
logo on the boxes?
Yes, there's a Thrilling 30 logo, and it will say, like, number something of 30.
So the Asia box will be...
slightly different. Yeah, it'll have a different Thrilling 30 thing on it.
But it will still be sequentially numbered.
Yep. And so
Yeah, that kind of bums me out.
When I was watching the live report that Kickback was doing, bless his heart, his little tiny...
black heart.
Yep. So they were starting to say, like, number 1 through 4, and I was like, oh man, like, it'd be kind of stupid crazy to try to collect this, but... I think it would be kind of cool to collect all 30 Thrilling 30 Transformers and, like, have them as a display for a year. And then they get through 5, 6, and 7. Number four, it's like, Asia Metroplex, Asia Ultra Magnus, Asia Energon Optimus, or Asia Beast Hunters Ultimate Prime. And I'm like, okay. So basically, one of those is a retail toy in a new box, and then the Ultra Magnus and the Metroplex are repeated in the first 10 of the Thrilling 30. So I'm like, now this is getting a bit less cool. And then Masterpiece Acid Storm and Masterpiece Soundwave are another two members of the Thrilling 30. So if only those two repeats happen, maybe if I ever go crazy someday during the next year and I have the money, I will actually pursue the Thrilling 30. But I was getting really hyped and then had my knees hit with a sledgehammer while I was getting hyped during that announcement.
Yeah, I think what kind of bums me out is that they're including things that aren't it's not all going to be available in the same region.
Yeah.
I think what bugs me. And it's like, I'm not saying Asia shouldn't get cool stuff. That's not what I'm saying. But if it was like, okay, here's 30 figures for North America, that's the Thrilling 30. You know, you could put Masterpiece Acid Storm and Soundwave in there because that's the North America releases.
Yeah,
and they're that literally... That bug me, but
yeah,
the fact that there's a bunch of doubles now, and it's going to be crazy to get all 30... Because if you only had to deal with one Metroplex, and you're like, I'm getting the whole Thrilling 30, but you're going to be dealing with... Because they haven't announced all 30, right?
No, not yet.
Might be more Metroplexes.
Currently, the worst part of the Thrilling 30 right now is that... two convention-exclusive Metroplexes are among them, and the actual toys are practically identical except for their decoy figures. So, that kind of bummed me out severely, and killed my enthusiasm pretty quick. But we got some cool info on some of these other ones, particularly something I'd missed at BotCon. The reissue Predaking we're getting is going to come with a bonus accessory, which is the Beast Hunter Voyager Optimus Prime sword redone in gold, because it looks more like a Predaking sword than any of the swords G1 Predaking came with.
Yeah, eat at third parties.
Yep. Suck it. Otherwise, these are all things we've seen before. But it's kind of cool to get some confirmation on what is Thrilling 30 and what isn't. The first two Platinum toys, the Year of the Snake Platinum toys, are not Thrilling 30, because they're from the year before. They're from the Tantalizing 29. Of which there are only two.
There were Year of the Rabbit. That would make them extra thrilling.
Masterpiece Stampy. Okay, maybe I shouldn't have said that. That was a cruel notion to mention.
When is the next Year of the Rabbit? Because if somebody doesn't think to make that happen, somebody blew it.
I could not tell you off the top of my head when the next Year of the Rabbit is.
Everyone at Takara Tomy and Hasbro should be fired if the next Year of the Rabbit comes around and there isn't some, even if it's a reissue Stampy, something Stampy has to come out for the next Year of the Rabbit.
I do not disagree. But yeah, there's not much else to talk about here unless you have anything you want to add about the notion of the Thrilling 30. We also learned that the fan-built bot toy is going to be the final toy in the Thrilling 30 line. Which is coming at the end of 2014. It's going to end with the fan-built bot, which is kind of cool.
And it's going to be an eHobby exclusive. Or one of those, like, awful, like, you can only get it through some Japanese magazine.
You have to spend 3,000 yen in a Japanese Toys R Us to get the toy as a free bundle in.
Yeah, and then pay extra for your middleman. The Thrilling Screwjob.
That's the name of my new movie. How'd you?
That was the name of my punk band.
Thrilling Screwjob.
My horror punk band that was ripping off the Misfits.
Good work. High five.
Very specific.
Respect points. Fist bumps. The next topic we have here is a real quick one. The Beast Hunters weaponizers.
Oh, you think so?
I think it's going to be quick.
Yeah, well, watch me.
All right, let's do this.
Sounds like a challenge.
First up, we've got Weaponizer Optimus Prime with all his red replaced with green, and he has a giant meat cleaver as a new accessory.
That's kind of rad.
I like the meat cleaver.
That's, you know what? You were right. This is going to be quick because the meat cleaver is the only thing I care about in either of these things.
You've never wanted a green Optimus Prime?
Green is my favorite color. And so just that alone kind of makes us cool, but so does the meat. Like, okay, giant meat cleaver, green. It's like the orc version of Optimus Prime.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm getting one over, actually. The Bumblebee, I couldn't care less.
The Weaponizer toys, I still haven't actually bought either of them, but every account I've heard is they're actually really solid toys that are just unfortunately only Optimus and Bumblebee. But I heard they're actually quite well done. The Bumblebee, the interesting thing about him, number one, he's done up in the way Bumblebee now looks in the new season of Prime with his inverse colors, which I actually prefer on Bumblebee, the black with the yellow stripe. But did you notice the word next to the name Bumblebee?
What?
This is the Weaponizer talking Bumblebee.
What? This completely redefines everything we know about Bumblebees.
So,
Bumblebees don't talk? That's crazy.
Small spoiler alert.
I can't
alert.
Deal with a talking Bumblebee. That is nuts.
Small spoiler alert. If you somehow avoided any of this news that may be related to what I'm about to talk about, just duck and run away. But Hasbro literally released a press release saying, in Transformers Prime, Bumblebee will speak. Come to our San Diego panel to hear him speak. So they basically did a spoiler for an upcoming episode as a press release and then spoiled the punch of the episode at the panel. But I haven't seen it yet. But
does he speak one line and it's like, I'd like to stay with the boy?
I have no idea because I refused to watch the clip because I was like, we have 2 episodes and a movie left of Prime. The last thing I need is to start watching advanced footage of the 2 episodes and a movie that remain of the show. I don't want to, like, start just gassing out what little of it remains. So I didn't really care much for that press release thing.
Prime is going to try to separate him from Raph, and he's going, I'd like to stay with the boy.
I'd like to stay with the boy, Prime. But I am actually really interested to know how the Weaponizer is going to work with a talking gimmick, because I forgot if it already has electronics in it or not. And by all accounts, Weaponizer Bumblebee is one of the better modern Bumblebee toys that have come out of late. It's just also enormous and thus doesn't fit in with any display, but so's you go.
And his weapon kind of looks like a bird.
That's the Beast Hunter thing with Bumblebee toys, is they always come with a bird-shaped crossbow. He doesn't actually have it in the show, which is the funnier part. Anyway, that went quick, didn't it?
Sorta.
So, what we're going to talk about next is, to me, the big news from San Diego. The fan-built bot was revealed. I need to track down the other pictures of the fan-built bot, because the front page item only has one shot, and it's the worst shot. I need to go find the panel coverage, because there are more pictures of this character. The fan-built bot has been revealed at San Diego. Let me just say, like I was going to say this near the end, but I'm actually really happy with both the amount and the spread of Transformers news this year between BotCon and San Diego. I think it's much better than it was last year, with the sole exception of the fact that the fan-built bot being revealed not at BotCon was supremely poorly decided. I think that was probably the worst decision you could ever make as far as revealing the fan-built bot, to not reveal it at BotCon. However, I think it was all worth it because the fan-built bot,
The whole fan-built bot thing over and over again and BotCon, it's starting to
Is it mushing? Is it starting to mush together in your ears?
It's starting to, like, really weird my brain off.
Fan built bot, bot, com, bot, fan, bot, com, fan, com, bot. Blam.
And then I'm looking at this one awful picture, and all I can think of is Kabuki.
Yeah, where the hell is the panel coverage topic? It's somewhere in here. So the fan built bot is the result of all those polls that happened. And the joke's been made. I think it's kind of a funny joke, but I also think it undercuts a little bit of the actual design work on this thing, is that left to our devices, here are the poll options that all won out. It's a girl, it's an Autobot, it's a jet, and it has a sword. Those are the poll options. So this is a female seeker called Windblade, who is an Autobot, and I found the other pictures. I'm going to link you all of these once I have them all open. This is going to be a toy coming out in late 2014. It's going to be a deluxe. Apparently, this character will appear in the comics, which makes me really happy. And I still really love Spotlight RC, and I like the idea of this character being worked into the IDW universe where Spotlight RC happened. But they showed off a bunch of character sketches, which I just linked to you. There's actually two links worth of character sketches. And then they showed off the jet mode, which is a VTOL jet, so it's a somewhat unique jet. That's the same picture, isn't it? Oh, no, it's not. It should be different.
Yeah, it is.
Should be 508. Yeah, that's different.
When you were saying, like, this is the result of fan voting, I was hoping you were going to build up to some rant about how you can't leave this up to the fans. We screw up everything.
Well, the joke that's being made is, of course, a fan-voted character will end up being a girl with a sword who's also a seeker but is an Autobot.
And I hope in the comics they, like, totally make her into a Mary Sue, and then everyone just starts backlashing on our own creation, and we have nobody to blame but ourselves.
Some people are already severely angry with how this turned out. They are using the word drift as a derogatory term over and over again, because apparently no one ever stopped. Like, okay, so I guess it's still 2009 is the only way I can take that, because the idea of anyone still mad about drift in 2013 is something I cannot treat with very much respect.
It's almost like the community trolled themselves.
Yeah.
Because we voted on this. The times I voted, I was purposely clicking the dumbest combinations I could think of, just because I found it amusing, and I wasn't actually thinking I was influencing anything. But this... consensus. This is the consensus. So if you can't deal with it, then maybe you shouldn't be part of the fandom. Because this is what the group think came up with.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Everyone who's mad is also saying, I didn't vote for any of this. I voted for this stuff. So
not my fan-built bot.
Let me just lay this out to you guys. I'm going to make bumper
stickers and t-shirts.
I didn't want a jet, and I wanted nunchucks. I can deal with it. If I can deal with not getting nunchucks, you can deal with whatever it is that you're angry about, because no matter how mad you are, none of that stacks up to how disappointed I am that we got a sword and not nunchucks. So
I'm not disappointed about any aspect of this.
I was speaking to someone who's not here. I was speaking to average Joe dude.
I understand that. I'm not an idiot. Thank you for assuming that I don't understand what's happening.
What are you saying to me? You just start punching the microphone.
Look, I'm not upset about it. Like, maybe I'm not sold on the geisha kabuki face, but these are just sketches. Let's see what the final thing is. Like, even in the vehicle mode sketches, they're all kind of different looking. So clearly not everything is set in stone yet.
I think the geisha kabuki face is one of the things that is set in stone. Because it made it to the color picture.
Yeah, but there's clearly aspects of the final design that are still in flux. Or at least from what they showed us. Like, maybe they're completely locked in at this point. But what we're seeing from these sketches isn't the final representation.
Yeah, like, we don't even know what the toy will look like.
Right. The toy is the final representation. So until we see that, you know, let's all take a deep breath. But but what I find amusing about this is I don't see how anybody could blame this on Hasbro.
Oh, like, no, well, they're not.
You can blame Kabuki Geisha Face on Hasbro, because that wasn't part of the voting. Like, there wasn't like, do you want Kabuki or do you want
If that
Ninja?
Was an option, I would have voted for that every day. If they actually had Kabuki Geisha Face as an option.
Yeah, like, it's like that or, like, Russian Cossack, okay, or...
Oh, that would have been hard.
Or, you know, like, British fop. Just like all these really weird, like, old world costume.
Oh, I wish British
choices.
Fop was on the poll somewhere. What is the weapon accessory? A British fop? I don't know.
He's got like a handkerchief he waves, and the head sculpt is like this massive powdered wig head. He just sort of, like, effeminately waves a handkerchief to, like, ward off his enemies. Like, be away from me! But, like, so, everything, like, it's amazing how fans of things are never satisfied. So, everything is always going to receive outrage from the crazy corners of the fandom. But... in this case, you know, honestly, they can't pin all their rage at Hasbro. They have to pin it on each other.
Well, that's the
fandom has to turn on itself if it wants to be mad about this.
That's the bummer.
I find it endlessly amusing.
It's kind of funny, but the number of people now who are just starting to get in fights is just starting to bum me out. I'm like, man, it's like no one wanted this to actually be. Or, of course, no. I say no one. It's like a lot of people didn't want this to be the fan-built bot. They wanted this to be the I have the best idea, so it's the my-built bot.
Okay, like well...
I don't know.
Like we were saying, you gotta go in with the correct expectations.
Yeah.
Your votes weren't the final choice. It was the consensus. So, you know, I'm sorry that my crazy choice wasn't true, because I think it would have been funny as hell. But that's not what this was. So, chill.
I'm still sad that
go there's... start a third-party company and make your own thing.
I'm going to be, when this comes out, I'm going to be lobbying for someone like Dr. Wu to just make me some nunchucks for this character. Because, especially if she has, like, a geisha face, I think it'd be awesome if she had nunchucks, because geishas never use nunchucks, but they're all from the East, and so it'd be kind of mildly racist in a sort of amusing way.
Well, maybe, like, the animated Prowl nunchucks will work.
I guess. I also am absolutely in love with the design of the sword and the design of the head, because the one thing that I thought would happen with the fan-built bot is that it would look like the most generic robot I would have ever seen. I was expecting someone who looked like a background character. So to see how far they went with this and how much, clearly how much fun they had designing this thing, I'm doubly interested now. When I saw this head, I was like, I went into this going like, yeah, we'll see what it looks like. I saw this head, I am suddenly way the hell more into this project, because now this looks like a crazy unique Transformer, not just a Transformer. It is going to be kind of weird having that inserted into the comic fiction, but I don't care. I really like how this turned out.
Yeah, I don't know.
I am not happy about how some things turned out, because I think not being a Jet and having nunchucks would have made this a perfect character. It's only a 77% perfect character, but nonetheless, nunchucks have a lot of power behind them. They have 22% behind them.
It's one of those be careful of what you wish for situations, I think. So, like, for my own amusement, like, the more people get mad at this thing, the more I'm going to appreciate it. which is why I'm hoping the comic book version is just a total Mary Sue. I want the crazy people to just despise this character, and then I will like it. That's my fan built bot. Like the thing that just like, so I could identify those overreactionary self-entitled people and know, okay, y'all stay over there in a group and yell and I'll ignore you. Like, just now I know where all of you are. So just go over there.
I already have plans for this character on my display. It's going to be Windblade and Drift just chilling out with each other, with a big flag behind them that has the word anime written on it. And they're going to be best friends.
It'll be this character and Drift on a pile of corpses because they're so badass.
That's right. I love how she has a sword that doesn't look like what every robot sword always looks like. Like, it's all curvy and stuff and vaguely wushu.
Yeah.
And she has a sheath. A friggin' sheath. Robot swords never have sheaths.
Except for Drift.
Well, yeah, that's because he's friggin' awesome. Have I told you about Drift lately? Yeah, also, yeah. Anyone so who's still mad haters. About... Anyone who's still mad about Drift needs to read more comics. Because if you're mad about Drift, then you're... The only reason why anyone got mad about Drift was because they were reading the comics, so...
Or read less comics. Because I didn't read any of the comics, I'm not mad about Drift. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like, I gotta tell
you. I wake up smiling in the morning. No, I hear birds outside.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, not being mad about Drift is pretty great. I think it would be awful to be mad about Drift.
Why don't you tell me more about what it's like not being mad about Drift?
Well, for starters, I don't have to be mad about something stupid like a toy character.
Ah.
It's life's a lot easier when you're not mad about Drift.
What are the benefits of not being mad about Drift?
Getting to think about other stuff, except for how much I'm mad about Drift. I can think about all kinds of other things when I'm not thinking about how much I don't like Drift being whatever people are mad at him about being. And then I could look at the toy, which was a really nice toy, and go, hey, Drift seems pretty cool. And I'm glad I didn't read a comic book that makes me hate it.
The best part is that most of his comic books were pretty good. And when his comic books came out, a lot of people just stopped talking. I was about to say something about whether or not it's medically proven that you've lived a healthier life with less illness because you're not mad about Drift, but I've lost that.
Well, there's plenty of stuff I'm mad about, but yeah. It's like things that actually affect my day, like dudes not doing their fair share of the work at work.
How do you
stuff like that?
How did you orient your day to no longer include whether or not Drift was a part of it?
It just kind of never was.
Oh man.
Until the toy came out, and I went, this is a pretty cool toy. I like how the swords all go somewhere.
You know, they say holistic health is something to be wary of, but I think we've just found proof that... So that's Windblade. She has a blade, and she gets surrounded by wind because she's a jet when she's flying.
Hate on, haters. Hate on.
I also want to throw a quick shout out to Trent the Rainer, who had the amazingly good idea that it isn't happening, that her VTOLs should have turned into geisha fans.
There you go.
And a quick shout out to R. James, who followed up on Maya and the Rainer's conversation by saying she should also have landing gear or machine guns that turn into nunchucks, because machine gun nunchucks would be called gunchucks. And so I then said that me and the Rainer and R. James should form a third-party company called Gunchuck VTOL Fan Project. Okay.
You know how there's, like, those three-piece rods?
Yep.
How do you feel about those?
Those are pretty cool.
Okay, check this out. It's like a Gatling gun, right? A three-barreled, rotating three-barreled machine gun.
Oh, I know where you're going. You
pull the three barrels out, and it's a three-piece rod thing.
Oh! Okay, I want that too. I want nunchucks because I found a YouTube video of all the Bruce Lee nunchuck scenes, and it got me really excited.
Okay, the missile launchers, like there's double-tubed missile launchers under each wing. Those are the nunchucks.
Well, those would be the best, because then the nunchucks that she's hitting people with would also be missiles.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she could be holding one chuck and, like, spinning them around, and the one that's spinning is just, like, shooting missiles in every direction.
Yes.
And she's just killing everybody, because she's totally Mary Sue-ing out.
Ah! Like, this character design, the moment I saw it, I was like, I want every single Asian melee weapon to be made for this character, because she has a geisha head.
Like all a geisha the Ninja Kabuki Turtle head. Weapons.
All the Ninja Turtle weapons. Because, I mean, if she just had a Transformers head, whatever, but she has a friggin' Geisha Kabuki head, and that means that she needs just a billion, like, Rising Sun melee weapons. Get on it, third parties. You have a new mission.
Yeah, get started now. You know it's going to be deluxe size.
Yeah, start it's going to have 5mm holes for the hands. So
right. So, like, you kind of got the basics down. So just get started so they'll be available day and date and not, like, a year and a half later when nobody cares.
Yeah. Because I want to care, damn it.
Help me care, third party.
I had a long Twitter diatribe about this. Let me tell you. I said, hey, third parties, now it's time for you to listen up. First, I went off about how nunchucks are the best, and I don't have any nunchucks on her, but I'm able to deal with it, so y'all should deal with it. And then I went on to say, okay, third parties, it's time for some real talk. Make some goddamn nunchucks. Let me show you some videos of nunchucks. Naturally, they listened. I think.
Probably.
Anyway, let's go on to the second to last of the links I put up there. Beast Hunters Constructobots. I am really happy that we have pictures of these, because I was telling a whole lot of people that the line art for the dragons of these Beast Hunters Constructobots looked really good, and, like, already a step above where Constructobots currently is. But they also showed a whole bunch of other cool stuff, in particular the triple team sets of Bulkhead and Unicron Megatron, who come with two little buddies that can... One of them turns into a little robot, and the other one turns into a weapon, which I think is a really cool concept. Now that we know that all these things also transform without parts forming, I think that some of this stuff looks pretty fun. excuse me. But, I mean, it's all Constructobots. At this point, I think a lot of people are starting to come to their decision on how they feel about this stuff, because you're able to get it in hand now. So if it's not for you, it's not for you, but I still have an interest in this stuff, and I kind of like the idea of where some of it's going. I really like the tiny little dudes from the triple team sets, and the animal things, what turn into weapons. But all of this also just looks like it's already evolving. There's a lot more unique parts on all these figures. The vehicle modes on several of them look a lot more solid. The dragon modes on the two dragons look awesome.
I think that hound vehicle mode could maybe use some parts forming. It looks kind of crazy.
Oh, you mean from the non-Beast Hunter dudes?
Yeah, that was the link. That's what the link went to that you put in the deal.
Oh, there should be two Constructobot links.
Oh, I see now. Okay. Yeah. I got ahead.
Yeah, hound looks kind of weird. Yeah, he's... that other link with that hound is in, that's nothing new, so we don't even really have to talk about that.
Well, that's all... Once we don't really have to talk about it, let me just say real quick.
Yeah.
I think that jet mode for Thundercracker looks kind of rad. There's a lot that I like about that jet mode.
Oh, I didn't notice he had new wings. That's kind of cool. That Thundercracker's the cheapest price point, so he's... this is something that we just learned, actually, from people getting these. Every single one of these guys, no matter what price point they have, they actually have the same shape skeleton, so they're all the same size. The price points are how many extra parts you get with them. So the Seekers, Starscream, and Thundercracker are the lowest price point because they are just a transforming robot who comes with, like, one or two little guns, not a whole bunch of extra stuff. And I really like that all the Constructobots are the same basic size in robot mode. I think that seeing a bunch of them together looks kind of cool because all the robots are the same size. They just have different levels of accoutrements.
Yeah, the wings kind of look... kind of just like bits of stuff, like they don't really quite seem solid enough, But like what I'm really digging is like that curved fuselage. I think looks really cool.
I know there are better wing parts out there. By the time Thundercracker comes out, there might be people selling just bits of constructed bots. You could always get some nicer wings from some. But the Beast Hunter ones are the new things, and I think they all look like a marked improvement. So at least until 2014, Constructive Bots looks like it's going to run as strong as it can. The fact that they actually transform has me infinitely more interested in this line, and I'm thinking of trying to get. I've been hemming and hawing on whether I want Aaron to bring one to me at TFCon and then pay him for it. I'm probably going to say do it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to look at them for a while. I'm not going to go big on them. I've come to enough of a solution or enough of a decision on that. Like I'm not going to become a big collector.
Yeah.
I'm seeing aspects of this character or that character that I think is working better than others. Like maybe I'll get one of those seekers and that will be like even if it's the only one I ever get, like that'll be like my, I gotta see what this is about in hand.
Yeah.
Sort of deal. Like because I really like that in vehicle mode.
Hold off on Starscream. I forgot if his vehicle mode looks the same. I think it's a bit different, but I'd say wait for Thundercracker. Starscream's got a apparently line-wide QC problem with his head paint. They only painted one third of his helmet black, and it looks really weird.
Yeah, like if somebody was like, "You have to get one of these Beast Hunter ones," like you know, surprise, I would probably get the Shockwave.
What's kind of funny is that's also going to be the second Shockwave constructed bot because there's a G1 a year Shockwave coming out already. So he's getting two.
Well, he's awesome. Yeah. It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah, the G1 Shockwave turns into a jet thing, and this Beast Hunters one turns into a tank thing. So you get both flavors of Shockwave. Also, that gold Megatron called Unicron Megatron, they're also doing a Legends Megatron in the same paint scheme called Unicron Megatron. That is potentially going to become a thing. Repaint Megatron in Unicron colors and call him Unicron Megatron.
Great.
I don't know how I feel about that. Because it's a really kludgy name.
Yeah.
Are you Megatron? No. I'm Unicron Megatron. But of all these things, the thing that I'm most surprised by is how much I am friggin' into the Bulkhead who comes with a little blue bird and the alligator dragon thing. Bulkhead comes with like a hammer and a mace. He's got a very Bulkhead looking head. And I love how his two little partner dudes transform into just an ogreish looking little thug and a sword. It's working for me. So, I gotta say, Gratz Constructibots, I had, like, almost no interest, and then I had more and more interest, and then you secured the deal, and I need to buy at least a couple of you. So, well done. You did it. You made it to the big times. The Bumblebee Beast Hunters Constructibot also comes with another gun that looks like a bird. That really is a thing with him right now. And he has a spike sticking out of the top of his head. He looks crazy. He looks really angry, too.
Maybe somebody at Hasbro thinks, like, it's funny. I go, like, the birds and the bees, right? Right? Birds and the bees, right?
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Right? I just... this is my inside joke, right?
No! Birds and the bees, right?
It's like this one dude that has the ability to keep making it happen. And, like, he thinks it's hilarious. And everybody else just sort of rolls their eyes. It's like just... Look, it makes him happy. Just let him do it. It's not hurting anybody. Just you know, he'll get tired of it. Just look, it's just easier if you let him do it. Otherwise, it's a whole thing. And then he's just walking around the office. Like, right? Right? Did you see that? Right? Get it? Do you get it? Birds and bees, right? Get it? Get it? Pretty funny, right? Birds and bees, right? Let me tell you about the birds and bees, right? All right, Dave, I get it.
You know what the crazy part is?
It's funny, Dave.
If this was something that had happened and the answer was, all right, Aaron, that's real funny.
It's all right. Right? Do you get the artistic inspiration that I have there, right?
Hey, we just figured out why Aaron Archer parted ways with Hasbro.
It's like, finally one person like snapped. And it's just like, look, it was kind of amusing the first time.
Look.
But we all get it. And it's just serious. It's not that great of a joke. I'm sorry. Like, okay. We get it. Okay. Just stop. And then, like, he's just quiet for like a few moments. And like, and then everyone is just like, oh no. this is going to go one of two ways. And it's either, he's either just going to drop it he's not dropping. Oh man.
Oh, he's packing up his desk already. No.
Oh man. Is he ever going to stop cursing? I think he's going to spend the rest of his life cursing. This is really weird.
I've never seen a man
really uncomfortable right now.
I've never seen a man pointedly spit on so many things.
And there's like the one dude at his cubicle is just trying to keep working. Like I'm just tunnel vision on my monitor. I'm just going to keep typing. Just got to keep typing, man. Just don't get involved. Just keep typing.
This is my fight. Like,
yeah, then you hear like something break. And then you hear just like, you don't touch me. And just, I just got to keep, don't look. Don't look. Just keep typing. You never lay hands on. Just keep, don't get involved. Just don't get involved.
So that's a little inside look at how things went down at Hasbro a couple weeks ago.
Prove us wrong.
Yeah.
Balls in your court, Hasbro.
That's right. We've just presented the, as far as anyone knows, 100% factual account of how Aaron Archer's last day at Hasbro went. We leave it up to you to prove us wrong, because, I mean, you're the ones who would know, right? that's also our San Diego Comic-Con talk for 2013. Was there anything non-Transformers at SDCC that caught you? Or are you just now getting caught up on a lot of this news?
Yeah, I mean, really, Comic-Con just started.
I know, that's kind of the weird thing, is there's an entire...
In a lot of ways.
There's an entire page of updates, and it's Friday.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I don't know. Things have been nuts at work, man. So I'm kind of out of touch with a lot of stuff. And then when I'm not at work, I'm just playing XCOM right now. So, I don't know a lot about what's happening in the real world right now. I'm just going from work to XCOM and back.
Today,
is Edward Snowden still in Russia? I don't know what's going on.
Who?
Oh, man.
Don't activate the prism, okay?
Oh, man. Did you see that? Did you see from that KTVU news when they were reporting on the pilots of the crashed airliner?
No.
You didn't see that?
No.
Oh, man. When we get to intermission, I gotta send you some links. This is not good.
Oh, dear.
It's really messed up. San Francisco's shining moment.
And my girlfriend was trying to leave San Francisco while that all happened.
Yeah.
I got like the semi front row seat while being in Toronto.
Yeah. I sat there for a few hours watching the local news because they seemed to actually be getting information out where like the cable news networks were speculating about everything.
Yeah.
Speaking of KTVU, that's my preferred local news station.
Sponsored by.
And so I'm watching, and just anytime there was something that seemed relevant, I would tweet Corinne about it. And then she's like, I'm getting more information from you than I am from anybody here at the airport.
Yeah, I was asking her, like, how is the airport, like, how is being there, being in the most blackout area? And she said that basically the only source of news they had was that a bunch of people turned on CNN and then crowded around it and then all started, like, talking over it. So I was like, okay, well.
Well, you probably weren't getting anything useful from CNN, but.
And I was digging around a bit. Like, you know, this is the weirdest part. You know how I found out about the crash? I got a phone call from Kryn saying, hey, so I don't know if you know, but there was just a crash at the airport and I'm okay, but if you're worried. And I was like, wait, there was a what? Like, how have I not heard about, oh God. That was a weird day.
Yeah. Plane crashes aren't cool.
No, they're not. Because, especially right now, the first thing anyone thinks of is, who did it?
Oh, yeah. Like, was this terror? Like, that's why I wanted to stay away from, like, the cable news stations.
Yeah.
Because depending on which one you land on, you're going to, like, all of them are going
to
do it.
Welcome to the Situation Room. I'm Wolf Blitzer.
But depending on which one you land on, I'm sure you were going to get more of that than this other one. But I didn't. It's like I jumped around to a bunch of different channels. KTVU seemed like the most straight ahead. Like, we're just sticking to the facts and we're not going to try to make it up.
It kind of bums me out that you actually have to start digging to find a news source where you know that you are just going to get the facts.
Well, I've watched enough disaster coverage on CNN and MSNBC and Fox to know they're just talking.
Yeah.
Like, they're not trying to figure, they're just running their mouths, like all three of them.
And they have really good, really efficient teams who make up those awesome, epic packages before any new talking bit. It's like, yeah, Situation, it's like, SFO, bum, 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 bum. And then, like, bits of a plane follow.
Yeah, and then the segment starts with, like, is there any new information? No new information. Well, so what do you think could have happened? I don't know.
Aliens.
Yeah. Terrorists.
I like how we both said aliens at the same time.
Loch Ness, Bigfoots. Like, they might as well be talking about Bigfoots. And then I, like, went to a couple, like, I went to Kron, and I'm like, Kron's okay, but let's see what KTVU is doing. I'm like, I just like KTVU, so I'm going to stay here. And they seem to be handling it, so.
Good on them. It's always best if the local news does a good job, I think.
Well, you'd hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, if the plane crashed at your airport, you would hope that the people that live next to the airport would handle it.
Yeah, but I hope so. Have you ever heard of a guy named Rob Ford?
I don't think so.
That's the mayor of Toronto?
Oh, yeah. I asked you what was up with your boy that one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just forgot his name. Yeah, that dude's nuts.
Yep.
I heard that one night a few weeks ago, the police raided and arrested everyone that may have been involved with that videotape that shows him smoking crack.
Yeah, and the guys who claim to have the tape have mysteriously disappeared forever.
Yeah, disappeared.
Yeah. Funny how they fled town. Yep.
Well, they did a whole big thing on that dude on a Smodcast a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, all this stuff's coming up about the guy. And apparently what tends to happen is he does something really messed up. Then the press asks him about it, and he denies anything to do with it. And then definitive evidence comes out that he did it in the first place, and then he apologizes. And, like, this has happened, like, 5 times. Like, there was drunk driving in Florida. There was, like, getting into a fight with somebody at a hockey game. It just keeps happening. Yeah, that dude's nuts.
Yep. One of my least favorite aspects of Toronto upon arriving in Toronto.
Rob was there at the airport just making a scene. Like, arguing with, like, the clerk at the Cinnabon.
I'm like, who's that asshole? Like, he's the mayor. I'm like, oh. Oh, no.
Don't you know who I am, eh? I want extra frosting on my Cinnabon, eh?
I'll have you erased, you know.
I'll have the police come and raid your Cinnabon store in the middle of the night.
They'll black bag you and no one will know your name.
He's waving a crack pipe at him.
I've never used crack in my life. As he's waving it at them. He's out of nowhere.
Crack is whack, eh?
So that's our Canadian politics minute.
No politics.
Yeah, no politics discussion in the thread. If you want to come at us, then, you know, on Twitter, come at Seth and tell him why Rob Ford is a saint.
Yeah.
Because Seth really wants to hear that.
I'd be fascinated to hear what your argument is. I actually want to hear a Rob Ford supporter explain why he's cool. Look, sometimes politicians get caught smoking crack, Mary and Barry. And then you just get yourself reelected and it's all good. Happened in America, it can happen in Canada. It's all right. Just fess up.
It's the 21st century. Has been now for a little while. We're going to take a quick intermission break. And then we'll come back with some what we got this week's.
Yeah, and I can show you this video.
Yeah, I got to see this video. Talk to you guys in a second.
Vacation. One of the few stories I paid attention to over my break was the tragic crash landing of Asiana Flight 214 at San Francisco International Airport. Three people were killed, and everyone affected by this has my deepest sympathies. But I'll tell you who has none of my sympathy. The folks over at KTVU, San Francisco's news leader.
KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao.
Well, obviously, that was a major fook up. And anchor Tori Campbell quickly apologized.
Earlier in the newscast, we gave some names of pilots involved in the Asiana Airlines crash. These names were not accurate, despite an NTSB official in Washington confirming them late this morning.
The NTSB has responded by saying the official who confirmed it was a summer intern. Damn it! Timmy had two jobs. Get coffee and confirm the names of pilots and airline disasters. Folks, I do not care who confirmed these names. It is wrong. I mean, Wee Tu Lo, Bang Ding Ao. This is a Korean airline. Those are Chinese names. That's racist. Okay? And if you're going to do a racist joke, at least get the ethnicity right. Like Captain, park my plane too soon. Or, how you land this tang? Understandably, folks, Asiana Airlines is pissed and announced today that it will sue KTVU for broadcasting the names, saying they damaged the airline's reputation. Yes, these joke names damaged Asiana's sterling reputation as a world leader in almost landing planes. And I will tell you another thing. I will tell you another thing. KTVU may be blaming this on the NTSB for confirming the names, but they still have not explained who put those fake names into the news script in the first place. I'll tell you who I blame. KTVU's news director, Munch McCoochie. We'll be right back.
I neglected to follow up on a request I got on Twitter.
Oh?
I got a request on Twitter. From the Tater X, who requested that we address the Toys R Us rage and the fandom because of the Masterpiece Soundwave orders that are hard to get. Because people are getting, quote, butthurt.
What else is new?
So, let me address that.
Business as usual.
I bought Japanese Soundwave so I don't have to think about any of this. Have fun.
Well, wasn't that the deal with the Prime?
Yeah.
Was it the Masterpiece Prime that... No, I'm going to relay a story. Was it the Masterpiece Prime where people were pre-ordering it from the Toys R Us website and then getting emails going, no, we're sold out?
Yeah, in this case, Toys R Us, I believe, put up a bunch of sound waves and then canceled all of those pre-orders because they didn't actually have the sound waves. And so everyone's now waiting for Soundwave to go up, and apparently he might have gone up. He's also apparently available at San Diego Comic-Con in limited quantities, and apparently all of them got bought by dealers within about an hour. Apparently.
That tends to happen at cons.
Yeah. I don't know. I bought the Japanese one. I paid lazy person tax, so I don't have to deal with all this.
Me too.
We've addressed it. So
I still think it's a bummer if people are having a hard time.
But yeah, that sucks. I don't envy the position.
Hopefully you will find it at your local Toys R Us. Hopefully you have a local Toys R Us to find it at.
I want to find it at a local Toys R Us because the box looked sweet. And it's part of the thrilling 30. He's got different.
Well, that's why it's hard to get.
Oh, that's right.
Just because it's Thrilling 30. I mean, if it wasn't Thrilling 30,
who
there'd
would
just
give
be,
a crap?
Oh, shelf warmers.
Yeah,
the shelf warmers.
What's a cassette anyway?
You know? Yeah, what? Like, okay, Grandpa.
Yeah. Hey, Grandpa, Roland Rock. You and your little square shaped analog media.
Listening to your ragtime jazz music on it or whatever old people listen to.
All your ukulele music and your banjo music with your overalls and your rocking chairs.
And your megaphone crooners.
Yeah. So we got stuff this week.
Did we?
I'm making assumptions.
I'm not so sure.
Oh no. Seth.
Hey.
Did you get any Transformers this week?
No.
Oh.
I got a bunch last time. Get off my back.
Yeah. Whoa. I'm just asking questions. I'm just asking questions. I got a trio of Transformers.
Did you?
Yep. Before I talk about that, I also got a Kickstarter reward.
Whoa.
That's right. It's not the first time.
Those things actually pan out and stuff actually comes out from Kickstarter?
Yeah. It's kind of cool getting it, because I was like, what? This is Kickstarter in my hands. This was, we did a supplemental about this, where I recorded with the guy who did this, Phil Reed, who runs BattleGrip.com and also works on Steve Jackson Games.
Oh, yeah, this deal.
So he got the book done, and I got my two copies. He's actually, due to a surprising number of requests, in my opinion, because I thought this is cool, but not cool enough to warrant this. He's done enough of a print run to be able to sell copies of the book without being there at TFCon and I believe at San Diego Comic-Con as well. And he's pretty much, I think, selling it more or less at cost, like $20-25. It's a lovely little book. It's a coffee table book. It's small and squarish and has a hard cover and has a bunch of pages of nice quality paper with cool stuff in it, all related to third-party transforming robots. So, that showed up. And Phil Reed's a cool dude, and I want an excuse to have him on this podcast again. So, hopefully he goes through with his current plan. He's talking about to do a sequel book. And I forgot what he called it. I think it's in the updates.
What kind of friend are you? Where having him on has to come with conditions. Why does it have to be conditional?
I'm a shallow person, and I have trouble thinking about people if I can't categorize them.
I'm glad you're finally admitting it.
So this book was called Transforming Collections. He wants to do a follow-up book. He wants to do a follow-up book called Transforming Expectations. He made a really funny...
Before you go to Pacific Rim or look at the fan-built bot, read that book. Of expectations.
Well, the funny thing is he was asking basically about the Impossible Toys Tetra Squad. He was like, do you guys want 10% of the book to be 7 pages of the Tetra Squad, or use 4 pages to show all 7 toys? And I was like, I really hope he only uses 4 pages to show all 7 toys. Because 10% of the book being the Tetra Squad by the now defunct, almost defunct Impossible Toys would be weird.
Yeah, I got an email, speaking of Impossible Toys, from Big Bad Toy Store. And it just said, like, Impossible Toys. And I was like, oh, is this some sort of explanation about how they're defuncting? And what, are they canceling, like, a bunch of pre-orders or something? And it was, no, it was alert that, hey, there's new stuff coming from Impossible Toys. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, they're doing their last figure, which is a 4-inch tall, transforming G1-style Bumblebee Cliff Jumper Bumper Bumble Jumper and a billion other variants.
Yeah.
Glyph and Tap Out are in there, and that's neat. I like Glyph and Tap Out. So, see what happens.
Anyway. Rest in peace, Impossible Toys. I like the Quintessons. They were rad.
Yep. Well, I say rest in peace. You made
the impossible possible for several years.
I say rest in peace because, you know, regardless of how it all turned out, they kept trucking on and trying, and that's what anyone's got to do. They didn't leave the best impression on some people. But that's how it goes.
I, going back to as a kid watching season 3, I couldn't understand why there weren't toys of the Quintessons. And they made it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. All that said, I'm completely not surprised that they've fallen under and are collapsing.
It happens. It's the way of business.
And that company in particular, for all that they tried to do, they never had anything that looked and felt and had concepts behind it that would really elevate them after more companies showed up. They were one of the first ones, but it felt like they just never were able to fully catch up with the times for whatever reason. And they apparently had some pretty bad luck with factories and blah, blah, blah. So that's how it goes. I also got some actual Transformers brand Transformers.
Weird. That is weird.
When I was visiting Kryn on the weekend, I found all 3 of the new Beast Hunters Voyagers. That is Ultra Magnus, what's his name? Grimwing, and Sharkticon Megatron. So let me talk briefly about Ultra Magnus. He's okay. He's based on the Prid Optimus Prime mold. Since he no longer has a silly, useless electronic gun, all that budget turned into a whole pile of new tooling and accessories for him, and they're all kind of neat. The wing backpack is removable. His shoulders can fold up to just be, like, towering shoulder columns. And the 2 missiles can be mounted on his shoulders, and they look kind of like the G1 missiles a little bit. In the way that you can mount them. So he's okay. Grimwing. Green dragon dude. I am in love with that toy. Was really skeptical going in because everyone loved Ripclaw, and I only kind of like Ripclaw, and everyone loves Grimwing. I kind of like Grimwing a lot. He's got a lot of personality. His robot mode looks way better than in the stock photo I just shared with Seth, because his shoulders are not up where they're supposed to. That stock photo is beyond wrong, the way that his robot mode looks. He's actually really well proportioned. Since I have some Repro Satsu labels, I was able to use Rainer's trick of just using some scrap vinyl to bulk up the clip that is supposed to hold his robot mode chest together, and it works fine. I still don't like how his shoulders don't really lock into anything. They kind of just chill out and are relying on the power of their soft ratchet detent that uses that they use to rotate outwards. But I love his color palette, and he's able to have some really excellent just standing poses that look extremely natural, which is something I value a whole lot in an action figure. So it's neat. And he turns into an Ursagriff. And on the back of the box, it says Ursagriff mode. And apparently, I forgot his name now, but the dude who designed him was extremely particular and excited that he was able to get an Ursagriff into Transformers.
Is that a thing from mythology? Or?
I have no... I think it's an actual thing, but I'm not sure. I didn't do any research.
Well, Ursa, isn't that like a bear?
Yeah, it's like a bear bird griffin thing.
Right. So like a griffin is like an eagle and a lion. And a hippogriff is like, what, a horse and an eagle? So this is like a bear and an eagle?
Something like that, yeah. You know, naturally occurring in nature.
Well, you know, sometimes out in the forest.
Sometimes eagles and bears just want to get it on.
You know, campers leave some beers behind. Things happen.
Yeah. Go and watch Grizzly Man.
Go and watch Sharknado.
I refuse. I missed out on the joke, and I refuse to take part in the joke now that I've missed out on it.
The joke that I liked from it was Ice-T goes on Twitter, and like it all like caps, like exaggerating. He's making a joke. I thought it was a great joke. He goes, man, Sharknado jacked my idea for my movie Gorilla Cane, a hurricane of gorillas. And I went, I like that. Ice-T making sure everyone remembers he's the best thing on Twitter.
I like that a lot. So I like Grimwing. He's pretty cool. And his gun is a little, like, second figure almost. It's a little weird bird thing that apparently is possibly the manifestation of all of his negative aspects removed from his body and formed into a demented little bird head thing called Blackbeak. The Sharktacon Megatron. Beautiful figure, beautiful remold, and I think it's one of the best things to come out of the line. It's really, 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 really well done. It's a Larry Panzeca, guy who did the colors on it. Apparently, it was one of his passion projects. It's the Prid Megatron mold, almost like I'd say like 70% new parts. And his weapon is a fish-oriented gun that turns into a sword, and it's like the manifestation of a one accessory apology for everything that ever went wrong with mech tech weapons, because it's beautiful the way it works, to transform into a sword and back. Megatron's alt mode is his prime jet mode, but now themed after a Sharktacon. And the thing that really works about this, aside from having so many new parts, well, that's one part of this. The thing that makes him work is his color work is excellent. The paint work is superb. The brownish gunmetal is actually a really beautiful dark gunmetal in person. He has so many new parts. So there's actually new aspects of his to the transformation now. Like the chest pieces lock together in robot mode. They unlock and then move down and relock in alt mode. His shoulder pads have moving parts now and have kind of not working tabs for the vehicle mode. There's a piece that now folds over and covers his head in alt mode. He is a lovingly crafted figure of a really dumb idea. And that's what I love about it. Is someone just sat there, and I feel like someone almost sat there going like, what if Megatron was suddenly a Sharktacon? And then they put 215% effort into doing that. That's what this figure is. It is a beautifully done figure of a really silly idea, and I love it. I highly recommend this figure, just for the almost just for being the talking piece that it is, but also because it's actually pretty well done as well. It's the best version of the Voyager Prime Megatron mold, and that's saying a lot. So I like it. My one main problem with it is for all the new parts, I really wish he had new biceps that had a wider range of motion for his arms. But otherwise, I am in love with it. The also really weird part, he has like a bright turquoise face and like jet black teeth. So when he's baring his teeth, they're all black and it looks really weird. So I really like him. The pink is beautiful. The teal is beautiful. Sharktacon Megatron. He's only called Megatron on the package. It's in the instructions where they add the word Sharktacon, and it makes it feel like they weren't able to say that, and at the last minute they were, but they could only append it onto the instructions. But whoever came up with this idea was so behind it. He was like, yes, yes, reprint the instructions. We must make sure the world knows he is Sharktacon Megatron.
You know what would have been better?
What?
If he was Sharktacon Unicron Megatron.
Yes, I agree.
They failed.
I am
boycotting this toy because it's not Charticon either. Oh my god.
I'm going to give them this out, okay? I think that the idea of Unicron Megatron hadn't formulated when this was being made. This is maybe the precursor.
So? It was retroactive.
They hate the fans.
Clearly. Should have had a kabuki face.
Yeah. I meant to add back when we were talking about San Diego stuff, because people were getting kind of mad that there were like colored versions of some of those toys, whereas at BotCon we only got to see uncolored photos that we couldn't share.
Whoa, people are getting mad about colored.
That's right. I'm playing Bioshock Infinite right now. I have a theory about that, which I think is not unrealistic, because they did show us everything. Just some of it was in gray prototype. My theory is that the paint masters weren't done at BotCon, but then in the preceding 2 weeks, they were done and ready for show at San Diego, because they need the paint masters done to take the photos that get all doctored up. So I think that's the reason why. Maybe I'm not trying to be an apologist, just that's how the logic works in my head. I'm not going to fight you over it. If you think that there's something more sinister going on, then I'm not gonna go blow to blow, because I don't care enough about it. That's a theory I have, and hopefully that helps someone out. That's also all the Transformers I got this week. Did that help you out at all, Seth?
Oh, immensely.
Okay, good.
I didn't know what a Ursa Griff was until now.
Excellent. I didn't either until the dude is really excited about it, so...
It's like, you don't understand, man.
I have dreams of the Ursa Griff. It's my spirit animal. And
in this Greek epic poem, like, Hermes fought the Ursa Griff naked wrestling.
Because Greece. Seth, did you get anything else this week? Like, it doesn't have to be Transformers anymore because we're in the off-topic section.
Toys? No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this has just been a blank. It's one of those deals where, like, there's not enough stuff in my pile of loot.
Yeah.
And there's just not really anything locally in stores because Kmart. And I just haven't been out of town to go to anywhere else besides Kmart. But... dig this.
What?
July 28th, Target opens in Petaluma. So.
Oh, man.
We'll see.
Toys now, every week.
Well, here's the question. Is it going to be a good Target, like the one in Santa Rosa, where I actually find stuff periodically, or is it going to be a bad Target, like Rona Park, where I never find anything?
Time
will tell.
Tune in and find out in 2 weeks.
But something I bought.
Oh.
So as you know, has been mentioned, the late great Ryan Davis on the Memorial podcast Giant Bomb did. They talked about his penchant for drinking bourbon. And they mentioned several times that it sounded like his drink of choice was called Eagle Rare. I went and I found a bottle of Eagle Rare. So I got that. It's pretty tasty.
I was trying to find that when I was in the States on the weekend and I couldn't.
Yeah, I don't know if there's some distribution deal where it's only available in certain regions. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. But, yeah, I found it at a liquor store. Like I knew, like, in California, you could buy hard alcohol in grocery stores and, convenience stores. I know in some parts of the country, like, grocery stores can only have, like, beer and wine or just wine or nothing. It depends on your state and county, and there's all kind of blue laws and all kinds of crazy stuff. California ain't got none of that. But like in grocery stores, they're just stocking the big stuff, Jameson's and Jim Beam and Maker's Mark. And I knew don't even bother looking there. They ain't going to have it. So I found like a standalone World Liquor Store and they had it. So got a bottle that's pretty tasty. I enjoy it.
Nice.
I've been sipping on it this whole show.
One ice cube or none?
The first taste, I went with the one ice cube thing, which apparently was his whole deal. But I tend to drink this stuff neat.
Mm-hmm.
So the ice ends up just watering it down in the end. Like, I like when it's cold, but I don't need the water added. Mm-hmm. So I just go without usually.
Once I find it, I got to try it with one ice cube for the sake of the reason why I'm looking for it at all. But, yeah.
And then after that, you're just going to swill it from the bottle.
Yep. Paper bag. I'm going to actually get a new paper bag. I'm going to buy one at Dollarama just to crumple up around the bottle.
just pulling long pulls off the bottle and just yelling at in your new apartment like, centipedes, where you at now, centipedes? You ain't got nothing on me.
What do you would have wanted?
Then neighbors are like, oh, just don't get involved. Just don't get involved. Like, we thought the last guy was, oh, we didn't know how good we had it.
I wish that meth head would come back.
We didn't know how good we had it with that guy listening to Skrillex all night. That was way better than this guy yelling at centipedes out there.
So was that your off-topic haul? Was some tribute bourbon
and steam sail?
Ooh, yeah, you're right. I've been taking part in that too.
So far, I've only bought two games for myself. I've only been playing one so far. So I got XCOM finally. That's a really great game. I've probably played it more than I did the original XCOM, which I tried playing over and over again. I'm playing this on easy because I know it's hard. And even on easy, it gets tricky. And there's been times things have gone really bad. Like, I think you could call it easy, like, forgiving mode, where you could actually make, like, one mistake and still be okay. Make two mistakes, and you're done. Yeah, so I'm doing the thing that, like, you know, some folks we know, when the game was newer, when they were playing, like, I'm naming all my soldiers after people I know, and then telling them about it. Just like, hey, you got 4 kills, good job.
Hey, you're dead.
Yeah, you got blown up, stupid. it's kind of, you know, it's kind of fun. It makes it a little, the health of the soldiers a little more personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it easy to like project characters into these otherwise just sort of blank nobodies.
The crazy thing is, a friend of ours in Toronto just got it and is doing the same thing with the movie night crew that we used to do more often over here. So me and Kryn are in two people's XCOM games now, and neither you nor the other guy know each other.
Yeah.
And you both tweeted about it within the same 24 hours, and it was really weird for a second.
Well, what type are you in his game?
I don't remember. I just saw the picture.
Is your support... In mine, your support, and Kryn is a sniper.
I think Kryn was support in his. I think that your version of us all look cooler, though.
Yeah, like, when I'm customizing the appearances, I go one of two ways. I either try to find stuff to kind of make it look like the person, like, oh, this hair kind of looks like her hair, and I'll change the hair color, and like, oh, this guy has a beard, so I'll put a beard on him, this one. There are only so many options. And then the other choice is to be like, I'm going to make this guy look dumb. So, like, I made one for Andy Cobra Commander at Moonbase.
I remember his other tweet.
Right. So, you know, as we, you know, unveiled the conspiracy recently, he is time-traveling Jerry Seinfeld.
Yep.
I couldn't make him look like Jerry Seinfeld, so I made him look like Hulk Hogan.
Well, it's only going to be a matter of time. You know, once he turns 20, he's going to just end up looking like Hulk Hogan.
Right. And then Aaron guilt trips me because I don't have an Aaron in my game yet. He's like, why are you being insane? And so I went, fine, this guy's Aaron. And I tweeted him a picture and he's like, that's a Scotsman, because you can't control what nation the character's from originally, and they just have like a little flag attached to him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fine, now it's Boardwise, because he's actually Scottish. And then an American came up, so I'm like, okay, well, Aaron can't complain about this, but I will give him the huge purple hair. And then you were happy now, and he just said yes. I went, there you go. Yeah, so that's fun. I got Fez. I haven't tried that yet.
I was tempted by Fez, but I feel like the stuff I liked about it the most was just hearing about it. So I resisted.
Yeah, well, when it was like $5, I'm like, eh. And then Defuzz gifted me Bully. And I don't know when I'm going to get around to that.
I almost bought that a few times only because I've heard recommendations for that game from a lot of unrelated sources.
Yeah. And Rockstar tends to do good stuff.
Yeah.
And man, Grand Theft Auto 5 is coming soon. And that's going to be a really long game. And then, like, the new systems are coming out not long afterwards.
Yeah.
But, And there's some games I'm eyeballing. I'm kind of hoping, like, because there's their daily deals.
Yeah.
Then there's the community voted deal. Then there's the flash deal. And those switch as their little timers run out. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff on sale that's just not getting advertised as being on sale.
You got to dig for it.
Right. And so I've had on my wish list for a while the Book of Unwritten Tales.
Mm-hmm.
His Giant Bomb did a quick look of it. I thought, oh, that looks like kind of fun. So I just threw it up on my wish list. That's on sale pretty cheap right now. But that's going to be that price until the end of the summer sale, which I think is the 22nd.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of waiting. Like, I'm like, okay, I know it's going to be this price, but maybe it will like pop up on a flash sale or something, even cheaper still. So I'll probably wait till like right at the last minute and then grab that one just because it's cheap and it looks like a kind of a cool adventure game.
Yeah. I did some impulse buying on that sale because the moment Bioshock Infinite went on sale, I bought it because I have gone unspoiled on the game. And so I really have been looking forward to playing through it and then going back and listening to all the discussions on the ending and then the game on the whole that I was avoiding.
Uh-huh.
And then when I bought it, Call of Juarez Gunslinger was on sale, and I had just watched the Giant Bomb video of it, and I kind of liked how it looked. So I bought that, too. And then I got a notice saying, more stuff's on sale, and I didn't actually get anything that was on my wish list, but instead I bought FTL, because I had never played that, and I've heard tons about it.
Yeah.
And I bought Mark of the Ninja, because that was like $3. And I bought System Shock 2 because I never owned System Shock 2 and I never played it, but I know too much about it.
I know too much.
If I was going to, I want to throw out some recommendations to the listeners. If you guys ever see these on sale, I really recommend it. Saints Row the Third, Saints Row 2, Sleeping Dogs, and Gunpoint. are all really good games.
Oh, the other day, Bastion was on sale for like $220.
I have Bastion, I just haven't played it yet.
Yeah, well, it's not on sale now, but yeah. Like, I loved Bastion. Like, the art style, the music, the voice of the narrator, just everything came together. Like, I just, it was like one of those rare, like, I enjoy playing video games, but this was a rare case where, like, playing it, I felt good. Just the tone, the look, the sound, just all all just came together. I'm going to bail on that word.
Metastasized.
There you go. That's the one. It just when I was playing it, I felt good. And like, I know, like, just like with Dashy, like, I'm like, I know she would, this is like right up her alley. Like, I know she'd love this game. And I'd like, I've been bugging her for months. Like, have you ever played Bastion? I'm like, you don't understand how much you're going to love this game. And then it was like $2. I'm like, I'm gifting it to her. I don't care. That's one of the fun things on Steam. Like, hey, this is cheap. Like, here, this was a couple bucks. I don't care if you play it or not. It didn't really cost me hardly anything. And so I sent it to her and she's like, oh, cool. I'm like, just play with a gamepad, because that game is terrible with a mouse and keyboard. It's just awful with a mouse and keyboard. You got to play with a gamepad. And so she better. I told her, like, look, if you don't like it, I'll refund your money. And then she, like, paused for a second. Was like, you didn't. I didn't. I'm like, that's a joke.
I just want to say to everyone out there who has Steam, really consider Gunpoint.
I don't want to.
It's a really well done little game.
Hey, you know all that crazy stuff you've ever heard about EVE Online?
Yeah.
It's only $5.
I refuse.
Hey, you know that Skyrim mod that turns the dragons into the Macho Man?
Yep.
It's $35.99.
Skyrim I was a little tempted by, but EVE I stared at for a second and I was like, no, there's nothing good that'll come of this. It'll either be a wasted $5 or it'll turn into something terrible.
When did you buy FTL?
Like yesterday.
How much was it?
The receipt doesn't part out all the prices. I think it was some really, really low price.
Because it's on flash sale right now for $250.
I think I might have paid $299.
Oh, you got robbed.
Oh, I can't believe it. I'm uninstalling Steam.
Have you tried it yet?
No, I the only game I've had time to play is Bioshock Infinite, and I've just spent, like, I played, like, a good 4 solid hours of it, because I really want to go through it.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
I've heard a lot about FTL.
And I only got to the mothership once, and I don't know what to do. I know people have beaten it. I don't know how you beat it.
Do you know, that's exactly how I feel whenever I read any FAQs for The Binding of Isaac, because I don't get how to win. And I got to the last boss, like, maybe twice. I don't get it. And there are people who have, like Binding of Isaac strategies. And I'm like, how? It's a randomly generated you're supposed to die game. And I'm terrible at it, but I really like playing it. So I figured that knowing that, I'd be more into FTL than I was before I'd played Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm.
I enjoyed my time with it, but my time wasn't very long. There was a point where I went, okay, I believe I've gotten everything I'm going to get out of this, except for frustration. So I'm just going to walk away with mostly good feelings about what this is.
Yeah, I'm going to play it. I also really wanted to play it so I'd at least know what it's like, because so many people liked it. And whenever Brad likes, like, McBradders are Bradley, Twin Twist from G1 Transformers. Whenever he really likes something at any point of time, it kind of sticks in my head because he's a picky dude. He He's more like McPickers than McBratters, am I right?
Totally.
Yeah. So, Steam sale aside and Eagle Rare aside, did you get anything else this week?
No kind of toy things.
I did my very first Shapeways order this week.
Wow.
Because a fellow named Trent Troop, who I've talked to at a couple BotCons, is making 3D printed things, and he made an accessory set for Cyberverse Abominus, and I wanted to get it. And then I figured, like, hey, while I'm ordering this, I should order something else. I very much intend to order more Fake Busker things, but since I already have one, I wanted to try something from someone else I'd never heard of. And I went digging around on Shapeways, and I found a design called Dashboard, which is a sports car that turns into a robot that's roughly Transformers Cyberverse sized. On paper, it looked pretty cool. I assumed that the construction and everything would be all neat. So, the Abominus weapons actually didn't arrive because there was something wrong with the 3D model. There was a part that was too thin. So that got credited back onto my account. Also, Shapeways only uses UPS shipping. So I ordered a thing that was $20, right? I paid like $5 shipping on top of that, right?
Correct.
It arrives, and I have to pay $13.95 cash on delivery, customs, and service fees. UPS is donkey balls, and I hate that Shapeways only uses UPS. And I double hate that Shapeways only lets you ship to the same country as your billing address, because I really don't like it when I have to ask other, not just ask other people if I can ship something to where they are, but ask other people to order things for me because I can't do it that way otherwise. I hate losing my autonomy. But if I use Shapeways again, I think I need to get Americans to order from Shapeways, and then it's really stupid. Anyway, the thing I got is Dashboard. It's a very interesting design. But I think it's not something that's meant to be sold on Shapeways. Because when you 3D print something, I got mine done in blue, strong, and flexible. When you 3D print something, there is always a small margin of geometric error, plus or minus. On ball joints and stuff, and peg and hole joints, it's all cool, because you can bulk them up or shave them down. Dashboard uses, like, I don't know how to describe it. He uses friction joints. You know the friction joints where you have, like, a crossbar with a nub on each end? Uh-huh. And it goes into two little divots that squeeze it together? Dashboard has a whole bunch of those in his upper body, and none of them work, because he's a 3D printed model, so the margin of error on those parts is large enough to completely screw everything up. I've managed to bulk out a bunch of those parts to the point where they kind of work, but one of his components for his chest piece is literally an obscenely thin U-shaped, like hard U-shaped piece with little friction nubs on four corners of it. And I don't think the thing was ever meant to be 3D printed. So I think it's a really interesting little design, but he is a curiosity and nothing more. It's not something that should be ordered on Shapeways, unfortunately. I know that Fake Busker's designs are all way more heavily tested than this fellow, Chanpon Man. But I really wanted to try a Shapeways fully contained transforming robot toy that wasn't done by Fake Busker, because I wanted to see what the other side of the coin was. Unfortunately, right now, the other side of the coin is terrible. But I really like the medium of Shapeways. I wish I didn't have to use UPS to test any of this stuff out, because I basically am paying double for everything because UPS's service fees are garbage over the border. But it was interesting still. And it's really neat getting something from Shapeways, because you just get this little Ziploc bag with a printed sprue in it. And even though he's a weird little toy and he's not really holding together all that well, I look at him and I go, this was printed, and I get really enthusiastic. I love the idea of printing toys. So it's kind of cool. And I'm going to be doing another Shapeways order sometime, because I want to get those Abominus weapons. And Trent Troop also he reacted to a tweet where I said Grimwing needs a big-ass hammer of some kind, so he designed a big-ass hammer of some kind in Shapeways and put it up on his store, and now I kind of want to get it because I caused it to happen. So that was my Shapeways adventure. While I was in the States, I also found one of the Ninja Turtles toys I've been looking for a while. Baxter Stockman It's a kind of nerdy Baxter Stockman in a giant robot suit, and it is a surprisingly poseable toy for a Playmates Ninja Turtles toy. And I got to agree with Trent the Rainer. It is the runaway success of the line so far, outside of the four brothers. It's by far the best non-turtle figure in the line. I also like the look on his face.
I saw it a while ago, and I just kind of wasn't in the mood to buy anything. I was like, I should buy this, and I ended up walking away from it, and I kind of regret it. But I'll live if I never see it again, so it's not like that.
I had never saw one, and I hadn't been reading reviews, but I was getting really impatient because I kept hearing that he was a surprisingly good toy. And he is.
Back when I would draw more, like I don't really draw anymore, I had an original character that was kind of similar looking. Now I'm not saying like they're ripping me off or
I invented Baxter Stockman.
Yeah, like there were significant differences, but kind of a similar deal of this like kind of giant robot suit and like a head poking out. It just kind of reminds me of that character that I had come up with, and that's part of why I kind of feel bad about not having picked it up when I saw it, because it kind of looks like that dude I came up.
Yeah.
Oh, regrets.
Sigh.
I'll live without it. It's fine. Nobody cares.
You'll see it again. A listener will find one for you.
No, it's all right.
Well, it's
one of those things where I kind of wish I got it, but, you know, I'll live without it. It's fine.
I give it a week before someone finds one and then sends you a message asking if you want it.
Don't buy it just because you're hoping to send it to me. Like, I appreciate the thought, but...
I will obliterate you.
Well, no, it's just a bad reason to buy it.
Yeah.
Don't waste your money. It's fine. Thank you.
This has been a message from Seth Buzzard of the WTF and TFW podcast. I also got some Glioses from their latest drop. The main new one is I got a clear version of Noboto, which is a character that's been bouncing around the Glios design pictures for years. And it's kind of cool. He's just a little alien dude, but he's shorter than most other Glios toys, and he's kind of interestingly designed. The collar of his vest and his belt are both actual, like, separate ring pieces you can remove, and he comes with an alternate head, and he's really cute. So he's been in my pocket for a while, for the last couple days. And also in my pocket is...
Lint!
And a dirty handkerchief.
The mayor of Toronto's crack pipe. Ah, I've been framed.
And I'm cops the one kick who down did your it. Door.
No, you were framed by the mayor of Toronto, and the cops are kicking down your door.
Damn you, Rob Ford. I will end you.
Those centipedes were there to spy.
Rob Ford centipedes have come to spy on me.
Fortipedes.
No! So I also got Nice Stuff's Outlander, which is my friend Nice Stuff's very first multi-part production figure. He sent me a prototype to do a review of some weeks back, and then the real one came out and sold out within a day. And I got a couple of them.
But he only made 10, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. he did a full production run on these ones, and I'm really impressed how they sold out.
Full 10?
Yeah. A full production run of 10 on these hot, fresh items.
It's what they call a Glios dozen.
10. And it's a cool toy. He's doing another drop of them on August 5th, which is potentially going to include translucent neon pink as a colorway. Because I got a translucent neon pink Outlander helmet in my order as a bonus. And the Outlander is a really cool figure. Regardless of whether or not you're into Glios, it's a really neat piece for the story behind how it came together. And I dig it.
I watched the video.
I go so far as to recommend it.
Too bad it sold out.
Well, there's new ones coming. There's new ones coming.
That's what she said.
Coming, huh? The only other thing I got this week was I got off eBay because I couldn't find one locally. An automatic center punch. You ever heard of those?
Is that like office supply kind of stuff? Like, I gotta punch holes in these paper.
So an automatic center punch.
Into the center.
This isn't a picture of what mine is. Mine is about the, is kind of the shape of a pen. And this one kind of is too. So what this is, it's a pen-shaped thing. And when you put, there's a spring in it, and so when you push it down, it pushes the needle nose up into the body of the pen until you hit the back, then the spring releases and its spring load punches the needle into whatever you're pushing it against. This is a fantastic tool for getting pins out of toys. And I've never been able to get pins out of toys, and now I can, and I've always hated that I wasn't able to get pins out of toys. So it's fun. I tried using this to fix the shoulders on my BotCon hoist, and it kind of all went catastrophically wrong. I got to try again later, but...
I thought you were going to say, and now I don't have a BotCon hoist.
No, I still have one. Now he's marked up because he's mine. I need to now get a rare... This is all from my friend Giltar on YouTube. He's been posting videos on how to get pins out of toys. And in the case of BotCon hoist, it sounds like a solution I should consider is just getting a really powerful rare earth magnet, heating up the pin, because it's one of those flat disc-ended pins, rivet things. So if I heat it up a whole bunch and then use the earth magnet to yank it out, apparently that's something that could work, so I gotta give that a try. That's also all I got this week. True story. So, I guess that brings us to an end for this episode. If you want to leave us a voicemail, give us a call at 318-775-9830. You can give us a call at 318-775-9830. You can give us a call at 318-775-9830 if you want, you know. But for now, that's been myself and Seth Buzzard. Next week the podcast is going to get all crazy again because we're going to be doing daily casts at TFCon. Me and Aaron are going to just try to we're going to carry the show because it's what we got to do. And then after that I'll come back. And Seth, I'm going to say it on the podcast just so the listeners can all get excited. So the next time we record is going to be after I've moved. So there's a chance that we're going to be podcasting by me tethering my internet off of my cell phone and doing some kind of hackneyed into the apartment setup. So that should be interesting.
It's going to go way rotten.
This is going to go terrible. It's going to go so terrible. I have no idea what the acoustics are like in that apartment. I don't know how thin or thick the walls are. I might just get a superintendent kicking the door down. In the middle of the podcast, who knows? Should be fun.
And while he's kicking the door, you're yelling, "Stay out, centipede!"
Just turn around and come at him with an axe.
And the neighbors are just hearing, like, door kicking, and you screaming, "Stay out, centipede!" And it's just don't get involved. Just don't.
Just keep walking.
Just turn off the lights. We'll be quiet. Just wait for it to die down. Just look. Just turn off the TV. Don't get involved. We got to move. That's it. Because this is the way it's going to be forever. We just got to move. But I like this place. I can't hear about centipedes every night. Just all that's coming through the wall is stuff about centipedes. What is this dude's deal?
Who is he?
I mean, I bumped into him in the hall. Is he Chinese? Is he German? I don't know. I was looking at him. I can't figure it out.
And personally, then, I don't care for either.
I mean, these guys are communists. Those dudes, like the whole World War II thing, I'm still not over it.
The World War II thing.
It's like, come on, man.
Can't you just shove off to one of your countries?
I just...
You got two, pick one. Anyway, we'll talk to you guys next week.
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.